if they're witches, but you know that's implied.
Got the storytelling, ego swelling,
pillow talking, moonlight walking, sea hags.
Welcome to the Sea Hags Podcast. My name is Chris Jeppa.
And I am Katie Norgren. With us this week is good friend to the podcast and just all around cool dude, Mr. Kyle Carpenter.
Hello.
Hello.
I was going to say 1/3 of your delicious comedy tricycle.
Yes.
Which kind of makes it sound like
tricycle
a sex
comedy.
Thing.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. Trying to figure out, like, what kind of branding should we have? I'm like, no, everything I think of is somehow inappropriately sexual.
I think just because it's comedy, you can just twist anything. So tricycle seems perfectly innocent enough.
Yes.
And it's...
But if you think about it too much, then you're like, is that a weird...
As long as you don't call it the comedy Eiffel Tower.
Oh, God. The wobbly H. As it were.
Anyway,
yeah.
That's a great way to start it off, by just inappropriately sexualizing our guest. Hello.
Yes. Hello. That's okay. It doesn't happen that often, so it's welcome.
It's a straight bear.
Yep.
Self-identified.
Self-identified straight bear.
Pretty good look, though. A lot of people looking for that these days.
Thanks, yeah, it's working out for me later in life.
Yes, well, it would have been really weird if you looked like this at 14.
It was weird, yeah.
Did you have a full beard at 14?
No, I didn't, but, you know.
You could tell.
Oh, I didn't know, but, you know, when you grow up thick, that kind of doesn't go away. So
I know a thing or two about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What words have we used to describe ourselves on this? A thicker milkshake, I think, is the one that you coined, which I love.
I didn't coin it. I stole it from Pete Holmes.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. I steal everything from Pete Holmes.
Absolutely.
This is well established on this podcast. I'm shameless.
It's fine.
I'm not a comic,
never know.
So I'll just...
He'll never know.
I just read bits forever.
I do like thick, though, because I used to just think fat. Like,
right.
I was a fat kid, and that's what you learn. But then later on, I was like, no, I'm more thick than fat.
Just very sturdy.
I'm a sturdy fella.
Yeah, yeah. Can't knock these boys over with a pail of water.
No. I come from farm stock.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Me too.
That's what I always like to tell. Yeah, you're like you have turnips and all kinds of things. And
mostly root vegetables.
Mostly
yeah.
Root vegetables. I always think like, well, you know, if the horse died, I could pull the plow, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my family originally settled in Kamsack, Saskatchewan. In a sod house, stayed one winter, said, fuck that, headed west. Like,
yeah.
We left Sweden for this.
Yeah, smart. Go to more temperate climes.
Yeah, and they left for Hope.
Ooh.
And that's where they, yeah, inappropriately named.
Yeah, Hope, Merritt.
I never
thought of Merritt.
Yeah.
Oh, these are just all these little beacons of
oxymoronic towns
in British Columbia. I always love when I drive on the highway to, once you get past Hope, it's like, oh, we're beyond Hope now. I have to say it every single time.
I don't think I've ever actually said that, and I'm really ashamed of myself for not catching the obvious pun.
You can have it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, because then you just get into, like, well, I guess you're already going through, like, weird Christian wasteland before you get to Hope.
Yeah, but... I like counting all the tunnels that you have to go through when you're going up the Coca-Cola or whatever. What the fuck? I don't even know what highway it is,
That's
but I know there's
the
China
on.
Bar is the longest one. I remember from trying to hold my breath through it as a child.
Yep.
I still do that as an adult sometimes when I'm driving. I'm like, this is a bad idea, but I'm doing it anyway.
Oh, no.
I killed us all. That was my wish, though, so it's okay.
Is that because of Tiny Toons, How I Spent My Summer Vacation?
It is very much reinforced by Tiny Toons,
okay.
How I Spent My Summer Vacation. I'm very excited that you just made that reference.
What
because
is that?
It's a very important childhood movie to me. Me and Jasta are really obsessed with it still. She once made an audio recording of the entire film on a cassette tape so that she could listen to it as she went to sleep.
Aw, bless.
It's very cute. that's the Happy World Land song will just come to me. Randomly. Happy world land, happy world land, where the fun never stops at only $80 a pop. It's supposed to be Disneyland. You get it.
I totally got it.
Yeah, you totally got it. That movie is pretty much just like a National Lampoon film done in Warner
With Tiny
Brothers.
Tunes.
Yeah.
Oh, cute.
That's true.
It's basically just the Griswolds, but animated.
Yeah.
And anthropomorphized. And they make furries horny.
Oh, yeah. That's tough to... You know, because I grew up with all the cartoons.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't do that, you know? Like I
sexualize them inappropriately, as we've started doing with everything on this podcast?
You know, like, other than Robin Hood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you gotta sexualize Robin Hood.
It's necessary.
Yeah.
But, But not in a, like, it was never my thing. It was just like, well, that's a handsome fox.
It's obvious that those foxes are pretty good looking.
Yeah.
I like when that bear wears the fortune teller's outfit. Aww. Pretty into that. I like a thick chick, you know?
Yeah.
I like that from Lindy West's book. It's like, I only had so many role models of, like, fat ladies, and, like, one of them was, like, a fat bear in drag.
She called him Blue the Bear. It's like, I know his name isn't Blue, it's Little John, but he's basically the same model from...
Yeah. It's Baloo, for sure.
It's totally just Baloo.
It's the same actor that played both roles, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
There's only four voice actors at that time.
No. I was saying, like, as if the bear was the actor.
Oh, yes.
The bear that played Baloo was, like...
Yeah, no, that is how it works, like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
His name is, like, Jim something or other.
Jim Bear.
He stars in all of the films.
Bear Grylls.
I think what we're trying to say is you can try to convince us that his name is Little John until you're Baloo in the face.
Oh, no! Oh, my God. With a dad joke like that, you should probably make your girlfriend take a pregnancy test. Because, like, oh, that was a real dad joke right there.
No, she has to live with me, so that's...
Oh, man. So, what have we been up to? When's the last time we recorded, Chris?
We recorded a week ago.
Really? Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, but we've sort of been out of town on various and just, like,
we've barely spoken in a week, which is so
And so I went to a Gulf Island to stay there for a whole week and didn't check the internet really at all, except I did have to use up my last remaining data to text Katie from when we were staying at... Or, like, we were eating at this one restaurant on the island. I was like, the band here is horrible, and there's people that I hate. And, like, there was some... I just couldn't resist. Oh. I had to reach out to my salty pal.
Yeah, always your salty pal. I was wondering what exactly you said, and I think it went a little something like this.
Oh, no.
No, it was so funny, because you were just... Like, the things that you mocked them for were so mockable. The table
no,
with the
is,
lady I hate.
This is revealing my mean side. I don't know.
No, it's so funny. It's like you just hated that the people that you hated started singing at some point, and you're like, oh, this is the worst choir I've ever heard.
Because there was live music inside the restaurant, and then everyone at the table next to us were all like, let's all sing along, and they sang in, like, five-part harmony, which was lovely, except for the one person who was very out of tune, and because I'm a snobby douchebag when it comes to music, I was like, ugh, at least I could sing in tune. But I would have mocked them for being perfect as well.
Eventually,
it was just like, I'm trying to eat my pasta, I don't need a choir.
Was it a creamy pasta?
Sure.
Great. I'm so glad.
Yeah.
They ended up justifying your hatred of them. Like, you must have just sensed that they were horrible, because you said they made Down syndrome jokes at some point.
Yeah, I don't even recall.
I think at that point you might have really started to enjoy yourself and then just texted me about the stuff that was still annoying.
That was when I just started. Yeah, but I did have two martinis. It's possible.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, well, they deserve every piece of hatred that you feel for them. So.
But it's, like, it's so passive-aggressive, because I was just, like, sitting there just being like,
ugh. I just liked it. I was bored that night. I was like, yes!
And the thing about my partner is he makes me a better person. He, like, really doesn't like it when I start to, like, bitch or gripe or snark about people. He's like, come on, that's just negative. Like, they're just doing their own thing. Like, you wouldn't want people thinking that way about you. It's like, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And I really try to, like, curb that part of myself. But sometimes you just gotta, and that's why I have friends like Katie.
Friends like me?
Yeah.
You've got a dumping ground.
Well, you gotta diversify your friend group so that you have somebody that you can snark with.
I'm a good one to have in the old friend portfolio,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Many returns on your investments. Because I got a lot of shitty things to say. I had to find other outlets for complaining.
Yeah, because I wasn't around on the internet all week.
I made so many posts and then just deleted them. I was like, this is fine.
Yeah.
I'm coping. I'm not codependent. I'm so codependent on you.
That's fine. I love you. I missed you.
I miss you, too. Okay.
So I got to go on a Gulf Island and sleep in a tent, which was beautiful, like on a windy hillside, so it was, like, beautifully ventilated. I don't know. That was just a big thing for me because I came back into the city last night. It was so goddamn hot and sticky, and everyone was so aggro about, like, parking in my neighborhood, and there was just, like, why am I back? But just hung out with my partner's family and lots of little kids, and we ran around and swam all the time and played on the beach and cooked delicious food. And we swam in phosphorescence.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was really
nice.
Beautiful. Yeah, the very last night that we were there, we, like, every night we check, we, like, throw stuff into the water to see if any, like, bioluminescence will pop up. And it happened on the very last night, so then we all went swimming.
Oh,
and
magical.
You get to see all the, like, glitter around your hands. as he swam.
So cool. I did that as a child, beautiful. And it's never happened since, but I still remember it.
It's only when the conditions are absolutely perfect, when the water's just warm enough, and it's been warm all day, and a certain kind of algae will bloom in summertime.
It was probably, I would have been like 8 or 9, and I used to go on like short boat trips with my next door neighbors, because they had a yacht. Don't you know? And so you are very fancy people who take boats places, don't you? Yeah, so they took me with them, and it was really cool. And one night they woke us up at, like, 11:30 or something, and we'd been dead asleep. They're like, come on out, like, come out. We have to, like, go in the water, because there was bioluminescence. Because we're moored fairly close to shore, but so it was, like, all warm, and it was just, like, around the boat, and we got to, like, just put life jackets on and jump in right off the boat and swim around. It was really, really cool, so... I'm glad you got a chance to do that. That's
my
so
my first very like awesome experience with phosphorescence was actually not very, whatever. It wasn't like magical. It was like we were just staying at a friend's houseboat and you flush the toilet by pumping seawater in, and I'm like, the toilet's sparkly.
It's like a beautiful dream.
Yeah. Is there ectoplasm in the water? I'm afraid of a toilet ghost.
But yeah, it was lovely. Like, Katie, I don't know if you would have liked this particular camping experience. Like, we had a little cabin.
It's a camping experience. I'm going to go with no.
Oh, okay, fair enough. We had a cabin, but we slept in a tent, but there's no running water and no plumbing or anything like that. But there was a gravity shower, so I did get to take a nice shower once. Just pour some hot water in a bucket and then just, like, let it dump out onto you while someone else, like, keeps refilling the bucket above. I don't know. It was pretty nice.
Very rustic.
I'd like showering in the nude on like the side of the beach. Like it was lovely.
Oh, that would have been kind of cool. But the whole like no flushing toilets.
It's just there's like a outhouse like away from everything.
There's always a goddamn giant spider that comes out to greet me.
There certainly was. Yeah. Everyone was. There was one giant spider that the kids were like chasing the whole week, basically, because it was either in the cabin or in the toilet.
Ah, Steven. Is that spider's name? I just decided. I don't know.
But it was so nice to actually, I haven't had a full vacation for a really long time, which is why I was so excited about it.
I'm really happy for you that you got to unplug. I was like, could I do that? And I was like, no, I don't think I could be without internet for a whole week.
I still would, like, we go to the coffee shop. Because, like, Gabriel Island is not, like, a remote whatever. Like, we would go to the grocery store every day and get new ice and new supplies. And there's the liquor store right there. And there was a coffee shop with Wi-Fi that you could jump onto. Right. But I tried to, like, stay as unplugged as I could, you know, and just try to hang out with the kids and play board games. And I read, like, 3 historical fiction novels.
Nice.
And this is all, like, I haven't had paid vacation time for 5 years or something like that. So this is, I could finally take like a full week off. So
and still get paid.
I feel good. I feel healthy and tan and salty and it's good. So anyway.
But the good kind of salty, like ocean salty.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That kind.
Yeah. Well,
the literal type.
Salty snarky is always there.
Are you? As well. You said you were feeling a little bit of vacation hangover maybe?
A little bit. Just like I was worried about leaving work and then coming back to, like, oh, I have mountains of paperwork to go through and, like, all this stuff, but I just had to trust that, like, my coworkers would take care of things, and so I'm just hoping that on Monday when I go back, it'll be fine.
It's not just, like, a smoking crater.
I'm sure it's totally fine. Everyone is...
Somehow it caught fire, but nothing else was harmed.
Yeah, everybody's very competent, and that's my own shit, where it's like, I'm the one that knows everything, so if I leave, it'll all fall apart. It's like, no, you're not that special. You can leave. You can go away for a week, and it'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, yeah. I know I'm not that special at my job, but I think everybody's going to be leaving me to hold down the fort myself for the first 2 weeks of September, which I'm a little bit concerned about.
Oh, no.
Oh, well.
It'll be good.
What else am I going to do? Just show up and do it.
Yeah.
Pretty much. But, yeah. Yeah, vacations can kind of... It's sometimes just harder to come back from them, I think. That's how I felt after Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were saying that after Portland, you were just kind of feeling down because it's like... You kind of come back into your life where it's like, oh, why does my life feel like I need to have a vacation from it?
Yes.
You know, like, I should be living my life as if every day is wonderful and I shouldn't need a vacation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's, you know, what you're supposed... Every meme on the internet, like, on Facebook tells me to, like...
Live, laugh, love. Or, I don't remember how to say it.
I've got my mug that has live, laugh, love on it crossed out.
Oh, I did not even see that. That is appropriate. What does it say on the other side?
Fuck the haters.
Fuck the haters.
It is a Jen Kirkman mug.
Oh, my
Perfect.
God.
Yeah.
Do you have anything that you own that didn't come from a podcast, out of curiosity?
Yeah, lots of things.
You don't have a Casper mattress yet?
That is coming next
week.
No way!
My MeUndies are coming soon.
We're so influenced by advertising, so take heed.
Do you actually got a Casper mattress?
I'm going to get a Lisa mattress.
Okay, that's pretty fucking close, though.
Yeah. I did get the MeUndies.
Yeah.
They're great.
So good. Good, because mine are still coming. I'm like, I don't know, underwears.
I don't know.
I haven't met a pair I like in a long time.
Good underwear is important.
It will change your mood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we doing an ad right now?
Well, you know, if they want to.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't have to be MeUndies, but you know when you've got your good underwear on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Like,
if my fingernails are trimmed and I'm wearing good underwear, like, I know I'm doing pretty well.
That's a basic checklist for a lesbian date as well. Heyo! I feel like that's where your face
that's
was going.
Exactly
so
what I was
like,
thinking.
Here
yeah,
we go.
My fingernails are trimmed. I'm wearing my good underpants. Like, we're doing it tonight.
Oh, all right.
To my window. Oh my god! You never sing enough to have to pay royalties. Not that you ever would, unless Melissa Etheridge is a secret fan.
I would love that. Come on the podcast, Melissa.
Come to our window and climb through, and then sit down like a normal person.
She cracked the best joke in her WTF interview.
She did WTF?
She did, yeah.
Oh my god, I have
great.
To get that.
Check it out.
Yeah.
But she made a joke, Mark Maron asked her about how many kids she has, and if, you know, it was just, I forget it, because she's got a couple kids, but she cracked a joke about, like, none that I know of. Like...
Yeah, I don't know how
I've stepped all over this.
No, I get it. I like it.
Yeah.
It's like...
But yeah,
take a maternity test.
Yeah.
They don't make those.
No. But Maren just like kind of didn't notice and he walked past her, which was too bad. It was a good interview, but like great line. Great line, Melissa Etheridge.
That's some like that's some gay swag right there, pretty much, I want to say.
Yeah. Well, that's her thing too. Like she's the rock and roll dude.
Yeah.
But a lady.
Hey, all right.
I love it.
Yeah, she's cool lady. Melissa Etheridge.
I don't know. But yeah, just like, not to get too back to like dark or sad or whatever, but
no,
it's
please.
Just like, coming back from vacation, you and I were talking about this, like, you come back and you're just like, oh, like all my life stuff. And it's like, is my life so terrible that I have to take a vacation from it? And it's like, no, it isn't. And you go through the inventory and you see, like, all the stuff that I love doing is still here, but it's, like, I just also have to do the chores and the daily maintenance and, like, all those things. So when you're on vacation, you don't have to, like, do your own laundry necessarily or, like, always cook for yourself or do those, like, boring routine maintenance self-care things because you're just on vacation. And so then, of course, by comparison, because you've, like, gone to summer camp and then you get to come home and, like, have to do paperwork.
Oh, right.
But it's, like, oh, I like to think that I'm living a life that... I don't need to take a vacation from it. It's just really nice to most of the time.
I think taking a vacation just let my mind quiet down enough to realize all of the stuff that I hadn't been dealing with in my life. And then by the time I got back, I was like, oh, it's worse because I hadn't, like, I was like, oh, I'm stressed and just taking a break will help me relax. And then I took a break and it was enough of a break for my brain to go, hey, how about this stuff that's been bothering you for a long time, but you've been, like, squishing down with your trash compactor? And I was like, oh, well, now, and I'm now dealing with all this stuff and it's a lot of work. So a lot of personal feelings.
Yeah. I guess like doing your day to day, like living life routine, you can just like distract yourself constantly by being like, and
I'm so busy.
Well, and you were saying, I think on the last one with Fatima, you were saying like you distract yourself with good things like, oh, I clean the house and I do the laundry and I do the chores.
Yeah.
And that's like another way of avoiding necessarily dealing with whatever issues.
Productive procrastination.
That's, I could fucking be the world champion of that, I think.
Oh, God.
Just this bringing back some
exemplary
memories of, like, school or, because I know that
memories.
Whenever I had, like...
Is this dissertation problems?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I had any kind of school assignment done or do, like, I would bake cookies, I had the cleanest house, like, all
and
my
eat out of your
order.
Sink easily, it's just shining.
Yeah. What's going on with you? You're just kind of in a...
Oh,
academic circle of hell at the moment? Or?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. I'm writing my dissertation, and I hate everything about it. and you know, when you're in that world, you're also being fed constantly. Like, there are no jobs, there's no hope for you, there's no...
I know, isn't that horrible?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it is.
Well observed, Chris.
But... The funny thing is, like, it's true, but everybody labors under that sort of special snowflake.
Like,
delusion.
Maybe not me, though.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Not me, I'll be the one who
maybe old Petey
it works out for. Yeah. And I've hit that point where I'm realizing, like, no, I'm not going to be the exception. I am very much the rule.
Yikes.
So my motivation is at an all-time low, mm-hmm. and like, yeah, it hasn't been that high for a while, so it's getting bad. Actually, this is a fun story, sort of.
It's okay. This is, we'll talk about how we cope with this shit.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Get into it.
I was going to go to a conference this past summer. I applied for it the year before, but I've gotten to a point where going to conferences and presenting my work is... gives me such anxiety.
Oh, the air quotes around my work was just very...
very real.
Oof. Anyway, I hadn't scheduled anything. I hadn't booked the hotel. I hadn't done all that stuff or the flights. So it was in Colorado Springs. And then, like, a month and a half beforehand, I was like, fine, fuck it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take care of this. I'll go to this conference even though I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I booked everything. And then I... just put it away, forgot about it, and the week before the conference, I was like, I haven't gotten any emails about my flight. I should check, look into this, and I hadn't gotten any emails whatsoever, no confirmations, whatever, but I figured out where I ordered the flight from,
mm-hmm.
and contacted them, and I did have the flight, so that had happened, but I'd mistakenly booked my return flight for the Saturday, not the Sunday.
Okay.
And it just so happened that the return flight would have been exactly at the moment I was supposed to be presenting.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, okay, so I'll try to rebook this. How much would it cost? And the original flight, round trip, was $300.
Mm-hmm.
To rebook the return flight would have cost, in total... another $500.
Oh, that's so horrible.
God.
So I freak out, and I write my supervisor, who's also going to this conference, let him know, look, this has happened. I know it's...
Can they change your time that you present or something like that?
No, I was just going to bail.
Okay.
But I wanted to let him know. Apologized, and, you know, I can't believe I was this unprofessional. But I'm sorry, this is the way it is, I can't go. So I leave that. And just felt like garbage dirt for...
hot garbage juice.
Oh my god, for a good 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got an email from my supervisor just saying, hey buddy, missed you at the conference, what's going on?
What?
And then I went and looked, and I hadn't hit send on the email.
My heart hurts for you.
So.
Oh, God, that feels so horrible.
It was bad.
So, grad school. That's a metaphor for grad school, basically.
Yeah, and, like, my studies are actually in, like, psychoanalysis, so I have to read that as meaningful, you know? Like, that, on some level, that was an intense process of self-sabotage.
Uh-huh.
It was layers of it.
Wow, yeah.
An onion of self-sabotage.
Yeah. So, anyway, so that's been me kind of grappling with that. Like, okay, clearly I feel terrible mm-hmm. about all of this. I need to start making some new decisions about my life.
Mm-hmm.
So... right now, the plan is to finish the dissertation just as much as possible, be Dr. Kyle, and then never teach ever again.
Oh my god. So. I feel like grad supervisors need to have, like, extra training in, like...
crisis management?
Crisis management, and, like, emotional support for their students and, like, helping set up plans more. Like, I would have really appreciated my supervisor doing that for me and, like, when I was doing my master's.
Yeah.
She was very, like, I believe in you, you're very competent, like, and she did help with some, like, you know, here's some timelines, and I'd like to check in at least once a month kind of thing, but it's, like, it would have been nice to have more of, like, a plan of, like, here's your mental health, blah, 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 or, like, more check-ins, or more, like, even, I don't know, but it's, like, you also don't want to seem like, you know, these are your adult students, they should be taking care of this themselves, but I feel like the way that academia is structured, like... it's very different from how you would normally conduct yourself in a...
yeah.
In a job. Like, I always prided myself on, like, oh, I'm at least gonna get through this and finish because it'll show that I can, like, stick to a project and get it done on a deadline. But, like, the way that the structure is imposed, it feels like weird artificial deadlines that never happen in, like, actual work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think they give you too much time to do stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a problem. So, like, I always fared better with shorter assignments that had, like, a quicker turnover.
Right.
You know, but these long, drawn-out things where it's, like, there should, you know, so I asked my supervisor, like, can I set myself deadlines that you will then check in with me on? And she was like, okay. So I was, like, kind of proactive in that. Like, I'll have, you know, this stuff, like, the outline done by this time, and then this done by this time, this done by this time.
Right.
Trying to, I don't know, because it's so hard for me, or else I'll just leave it all to the last minute.
You have to inject, like, the real artificial discipline there, because otherwise it's just kind of, like, doing it all the last day. Just do a last day of dissertation.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And it's that formless schedule coupled with that bizarre demand that it be perfect.
Yes. And, like, the most brilliant thing that was ever published in this subject. Like,
Like, you need to clear your space in all of the published literature. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't know, I don't...
Yeah.
I just want to write a thing.
Yeah, it was a huge relief when my supervisor... Because I wanted to do for my... We did not a thesis, but a capstone project. I did a public health degree, so it was more like, whatever. So I wanted to run, like, a workshop and, like, develop this thing. And she's like, like, it can't be that esoteric. It still has to be a paper. I was like, ugh. My whole program had been really, like, creative. Like, you can do a presentation or you can do, like, an art piece. Like, they were cool. But then for the last assignment, it was, like, write an academic paper again. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
So eventually when she said, like, because I was planning all these different things, and she's like, you know, you can just do a literature review and that's okay. And I had to struggle with that because I'm like, but I want mine to be original. I want it to be brilliant. I want it to be amazing on this one topic because I wanted to inject my own sort of, you know, spin on all of this research and stuff. And she was like, now's not the time. Maybe you could save that for a PhD if you wanted to. But even that puts a lot of pressure on, like, the PhD then to be brilliant. But she was like, you can just do a lit review. And so I did a 60-page paper still, which, like...
That's huge.
It's pretty big.
That's basically a master's thesis.
You know? Yeah. And it was just, like, rounding up a whole bunch of shit. But it was relieving to, like, not have to be, like, super original or brilliant because it was just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the
weird
thing.
That was a rant. I had some feelings about
apparently.
Yeah,
no, it's great.
I get it.
Unload.
My, and my point is, not my point, but one thing that occurs to me, in some ways, the support you get almost makes it worse, because you have this very supportive, you know, supervisors or committees or what have you, and it kind of increases the demand that you be excellent, or that you work towards this very small spate of opportunities.
This nebulous idea of excellence.
Yeah, exactly.
It's super ill-defined.
Your supervisors and your committee, it's like, oh, if you just do this, then you could be published. This could be amazing. We'll get you into this thing, or you should apply for this conference or journal or whatever. Like, and they're telling you what to do in this academic sphere because they've been doing it for 20 years or whatever.
Exactly.
And then there's not as much space as there was maybe when they were doing it, or things have changed a little bit, or the way that you work is different than how they want you to work.
I saw an Olympics-themed thing that that seemed to really be, like, the difference between when, say, someone who's a supervisor now, when they would have done their graduate degrees, like, in the late 70s, 80s, whenever. Like, I don't know how old most of the professors are in your programs, but ours are, like, roughly between 45 and 65, so...
Right.
So that sounds about right, I guess. And but what I saw was, like, comparing the difference between Olympic gymnastics in the 50s and 60s to today. And it's like, what did you need to do to get a gold medal? It's like some just real fancy walking around and, like, maybe one cartwheel or whatever. Like, ooh, amazing, you get a gold, back in, like, 1955 or something like that. Uh-huh. Now you have Simone Biles doing something that is just, like, absolutely...
Like, nobody attempts her flips because they're worried they'll all break their necks, and she just does it.
Exactly, because she's just, like, a 4'9" dynamo who can do these things and is, like, been training her whole life for it and can do, like, a million flips with one, like, piece of motion. And it's just so... It's, and what the caption was, of course, was like what boomers had to deal with and then what millennials are having to deal with in order to get, like, a decent job these days or something like that. So it's pretty simplistic, but it's also very illustrative of the expectations versus
The expectations are super high and the conditions have changed. So, like, to be able to achieve those things is incredibly difficult now.
Yeah. You have to work twice as hard for half as much, you know? Like, it sucks.
And in academia, even the most well-meaning people, like... implicitly, if you get even a teaching job that is not a tenure track research position, you know, you've sort of failed. Mm. Like, and I don't think anyone would say that, but that's still kind of the expectation, the mm-hmm. demand that's in the ether, so...
There's, like, a hierarchy of, like, these are the best jobs, this is what you should be striving to, and yeah. anything less is just settling or something like
yeah. that. Yeah, you know, that's because you didn't publish quite enough. Ugh. And it's, and again, nobody's saying that. I work with wonderful, caring people, but it's very much,
I think,
systemically part of it, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been engaging in the long process of divorcing my self-esteem from grades, mm-hmm. you know, like that.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that legal?
I don't know yet. I haven't gotten a ticket, but
I'm worried I'm
going
to go to fucking jail.
But yeah, like, I think if you stick in school, it's because you like people telling you you're smart.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, shut up. Stop. This is too, it's too much of being, the knife is twisting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to do a real process, both finishing my undergrad because I dropped out constantly twice, but right. like, yeah. you know, it felt
constantly
like
twice.
Felt like constantly. And then deciding to go into grad school, like, after a long break, and it's like, I'm going to try this different, I'm going to do more of a professional degree, it's going to be sort like, it'll lead me into more of a practical career path, but still getting, like, bogged down into the academic stuff again, mm-hmm. and having again to extract myself yeah. to be like, this doesn't mean anything. I just need to finish.
Yeah. yeah.
And, like, mine the pieces of gold that are coming out of, like, my experience being here. And so it's not even necessarily what I'm going to learn in the classes even. But, you know, what do I get to experience? Yeah. And what are the connections that I make with people? And how will this then, you know, launch me to the next phase of whatever I want to do mm-hmm. in my life? And it's now only, like, it's been 2 years since I've graduated. And... I'm just starting to realize what those were. I was, like, feeling so bitter about, like, going to school, and why did I do it? Why did I spend so much money? And
right.
now I'm just like, oh, yeah, reflecting back.
yeah.
This was really important. This was super valuable. This yeah. changed my life. This, like...
Yeah.
So, I don't know, to put a little bit of hope in your...
No, absolutely.
Like, that's very comforting, because I was going to say, like, yeah, I want to tell you guys something really gross and embarrassing, and that is that part of my job as an academic advisor is I can just generate anyone's academic transcripts, right?
Uh-huh.
And sometimes if I'm having a bad day, I'll generate my own and look at it and look at, count the A's.
Oh, yeah.
And be like, ooh. I'm good. I am so very good. I am a good person. I've done well. This is like, yeah, undergrad grades that yeah. I did as like an adult. And I'm like, I'm good. It's pathetic.
A weird thing, like, again, in grad school was when I like got a B on something and a friend of mine that was like, I love her to pieces, Brie. I think you probably listened to this. I love you. You're such an overachiever. She'd be like, what? Like, a B is, like, failing. And I'm like, yeah. ah! then, suddenly nothing mattered. All of a sudden, I was like, well, if the only thing you have to get is A and that is good, then I guess nothing means anything. And I got very nihilistic and just kind of went with it. And it actually made me feel better.
Yeah, sometimes there was someone leading by a poor example can put you into the right way.
But there was no range for me anymore to, like, you can not achieve or achieve. There's only do or do not.
Right.
There's no try. Shut up.
That's funny. I'm super down on my PhD.
Uh-huh.
But, I really believe in higher education
mm-hmm.
and, like, undergraduate degrees. And I think, and liberal arts degrees, too. Mm-hmm.
Anything, honestly.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Seek knowledge.
And it's awesome to expand your horizons,
mm-hmm.
you know, like going into, or like delve really, really deep into a subject. So I think that's the fun treat that you can do for yourself in a PhD is like, you know, undergrad, you start, you like get a like general foundation for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Masters, you might like narrow it down a bit. And then PhD, you can be like, here's one specific question that I've been really wanting to look into forever. And you can, like, pick away at that, and it's really great for people that have that, like...
Yeah.
It's true.
Obsessive kind of detective work kind of...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Something about grad school I do find really... Oh, sorry, Kyle, you were going to say something.
Yeah.
I keep interrupting you, too.
No, it's no problem. But I think going back to your point about sort of all of a sudden it all became quite meaningless, like
mm-hmm.
the system of judgment, that's always my advice to undergrads is, like, you guys are giving the wrong shits.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they come to like your office and they're like, I just need to get like at least a B plus on this. I just need that grade. I'm like, stop caring about your grade and you'll start to do better, actually. Like,
and start to think about, like, what am I trying to communicate with this piece of writing? Or who's my audience? Or what do I want to learn?
What can interest me and what's happening here, you know?
And, like, learning how to learn and think critically and all that kind of stuff is, like, super important. Will serve you the rest of your life.
Definitely. But, yeah, the ones who ask about the grades are the ones who are probably going to top out at a, you know, lower than their capabilities.
Or just drop out entirely. That happens a lot. There's a huge, huge dropout rate. I know what it is. I can't say what it is because it's confidential. But it's like, but people who drop out after the first year, it's enormous. It's, it's how I'm sure most universities make their money, is like people just not following through and paying a lot for survey courses, pretty much.
Yeah.
100% don't regret my bachelor's degree that I got. I found it incredibly useful, and even though people, like, it's a very insultable major that I had. Like, I totally get why people are like, about a gender studies, women's studies degree. I get it, but I loved it, and it was incredible, and it was great for networking. I met a lot of really cool people, and I learned a lot, like, of what I'm capable of. Like, I got a call last week about the harassment on TransLink project again. Like, CBC called me.
Oh.
What was his name? Like, he had, like, a really cool name, like Byron Bex or something like that. It was like a Max Power kind of name, you know?
Nice.
I don't remember what it was because he was calling from Toronto, but he, like, asked me a bunch of questions about, like, do you think it's okay that the TTC only saves, like, bus surveillance footage for 15 hours? I was like, no, that's not enough time. Like, it takes people a long time sometimes to deal with trauma and come forward if they're going to come forward at all. And he's like, oh, how long do you think they would need? I was like, I am not an expert. Who got the idea that I was an expert? I have a bachelor's degree in this.
Yeah, and you just did a publicized project, so therefore you're, like, contactable.
If you Google, like, transit harassment, my name, it comes up on the first page of Google. Like, that's so, that is my legacy. And that's a little alarming.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I was really thinking about just now when you guys were talking about grad school is that I've worked previously as a grad program advisor, like, for a really short period of time. I covered someone's academic leave. Mm-hmm. And I noticed a thing, and I'm still, like, close with all the grad students, but one thing I noticed was that only two people seemed to be chill about their thesis. Like, there's only two people that seem to come through in a sort of normal amount of time without being stressed out about it and just very confident about what they delivered, and then had a, you know, paper with no revisions or with very limited revisions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was a senior student who is 79 years old, and it was like her sixth master's degree.
Oh, wow.
And she was just doing it because she loved it. She's super passionate about it. Just loved her topic, and, like, I sat in at her thesis defense, and she did a great job. And there was another one who was just the most driven person I've literally ever met in my entire life, and she just, like, didn't seem to get stressed out about something. She's like, well, this has to be done. I'm gonna need about 1,000 post-it notes, and I'm gonna set up a big board for my research that looks like a murder board in, like, a NBC docudrama or something.
I do really love writing that way.
Yeah, with like the red strings connecting everything together. And she finished totally within the time frame that's suggested and not enforced at all. I was just like, okay, and now I'm gonna, like, plan my wedding, and I'm gonna go do my PhD at Concordia or whatever. She's like, bam, bam, bam. She's just, like, totally,
she's like a
utterly confident that I was like, are you a secret sociopath? Like, because I just, like, she's so lovely and so, like good all the time. And I was just like, what is your secret? Like, are you,
she can just execute,
a Russian spy bot or something? Like, I don't, it's so, someone who's like, I'm going to do this thing, and then does it and never shows any sign of struggling with it at all, I don't understand.
I would be curious to interview her and be like, what was actually going on underneath? Like, are you just better at hiding that stuff, or do you just have ways that you can do that without freaking out? Like, when I would set myself manageable goals, I wasn't stressed out. I would, like, set myself a weekly thing, but as soon as I slipped behind on those and had more things piling up, then suddenly I'd be like, more things are piling up, and then I would freeze, and then I wouldn't do anything.
Right.
And then more stuff would pile up, and then I would feel super guilty about that stuff, and then it would, like, and then I would just, you know, to my supervisor, I would just vanish on her as well, and she'd be like, where are you? You didn't even come to our meeting. And it's like, I was, like, frozen, and it's like, okay, let's start by, like, putting some manageable goals back in place. So I think people can sustain that. Yeah. I just haven't found the trick to...
Some people are just breakdown resistant, and I don't know what that's like. I mean, probably from the outside, if you don't know me, I look like I kind of can do that. But, like, people who know me really well know I'm always like, immediately behind the scenes, you get a lot of that. Yeah. You started to see some of that, I think, maybe, but...
No comment.
You're not going to sell me down the river.
Yeah.
But I think what made me think of that was just thinking about how we had a past guest and the third member of Tricycle Comedy, Justin O'Hearn, mm-hmm. talk about his PhD work on the show. He doesn't really ever seem to be that upset about his dissertation. Like, he seems to just kind of...
Right.
But I don't know him as well as you do, so you don't have to, you know, sell him out or anything.
Yeah.
But...
Well, he has a different relationship to it, I think.
Yeah. Like,
it's not an existential problem for him.
Yes. It's just work.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas, you know, I really coupled all of my sense of identity to this thing for a lot of years. Yeah, which has made me an effective at it.
Yeah.
I think, like, because it's a source of anxiety
mm-hmm.
when it's not working well. Because, you know,
so
I need this. This is me. You know, and it's not, and it never was, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't deal with it well.
Yeah.
So
finding ways to be able to treat all of that academic stuff more like a job and something
yeah.
that's separate from you to be like, okay, I've got this project I have to execute in X amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just, you know, set some deadlines and then do this. But, yeah, and then have other time to have a social life and everything. I think because
right.
you get sold that thing in academia, too, where it's like, oh, you should be working all the time and you never get a break. And it's always like...
Yeah.
Yeah. That brings me to my next question. Very nice transition without even knowing. You have a new blog that you started called Part-Time Comic, I believe.
Yeah.
And I get that feeling a lot with comedy. The sense that I'm never doing enough. Like,
mm-hmm.
no amount I'm doing is ever going to be enough unless I'm grinding at the level of, like,
yeah.
the super grinders.
Yeah.
So do you find, like, you seem to be able to approach comedy much more healthily than your PhD.
Yeah, that's been a thing that I've realized, because, like, I've had this thing that's meant so much to me, and I've had to process in a big way. It's still going, but the rest of my life is fine. I was talking to a friend, and... she said, so how are things going right now? And I was like, well, my dissertation is bad. My relationship is good. My hobby, which is stand-up comedy, is good. And like, my life in general is pretty good. So, bad, good, good, good.
Like, 75% good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
pretty
good.
Which is...
That's a B. Which is a failure, as we all know.
But, yeah, no, I've been through it. And I can see people who are way invested and coming up with, like, bizarre expectations and demands of themselves, which they enforce by looking at other people and judging them for
mm-hmm.
what they're doing or not
yeah.
doing. And, like, I see that now. Like, I'm used to it. So if someone's like, oh, they're just a tourist. They're not really here. I'm like, I see what you're doing
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
You're insecure about your own place because you're really invested.
Always.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
The second we started doing our limited show running that we're doing, like
yeah.
with our monthly show, that imbued us all individually with a lot of legitimacy that I would not have necessarily expected. Like, people take me much more seriously now.
Definitely.
As a comic.
Yeah. yeah.
It's like, fun. They're much more eager to book me. They want to get booked. They talk to me like a person. People who were shitty to me before are really, like, kissing my ass now.
Sure.
Which is so great. Best feeling. Actually, it makes me feel horrible, but whatever. I like to yeah. pretend that I like it.
Oh,
it makes me feel a little bit powerful
that's
anyway.
Flopped in an interesting
no,
way.
I mean, it makes me feel good, and then I feel bad about feeling good about
oh,
it.
There
so,
you.
Yeah.
No, I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's so weird that something that kind of, it almost came to us a little too easily, I feel like, sometimes, because it's like the first thing we tried to do ended up being fairly successful.
Right.
And I was kind of like, that's not supposed to happen, is it? Like, aren't we supposed to struggle more?
Well, I think, yeah.
Aren't I supposed to be embarrassingly bombing all the time? Like, isn't that supposed to be, like, part of the process?
Mm-hmm. And, like,
does that mean I'm not doing it enough if I still like it every time?
Right. I don't know. Like, I think, actually, this comes back to something I think that I wanted to say about
mm-hmm.
the academic world and the world of comedy, too,
mm-hmm.
which is you need the safe potential to fail.
Yeah.
I think, like... And that's one thing I don't think you get in your department is
mm-hmm.
Success is at such a high rate and failure is not talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of not okay to leave and get a job. You
right.
know, like because you threaten, I think, other people's dreams.
Right.
By making the pragmatic decision.
Mm-hmm.
And in comedy, like, I think it is important to be able to fail safely.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, I think that's where alt comedy came from, which is sort of, you know, the booking agents are going to the comedy store or whatever was like a big venue,
mm-hmm.
and you have to do a good job in front of them or you're a failure forever.
Yeah.
But if you can...
If you come to this safe little place where we can just be weird and no one's expecting,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
club stand-up, then you can do whatever you want
yeah.
suddenly. And then if people don't laugh, it's like, well, it wasn't supposed to be like that. Ta-da!
Right.
Performance art.
Yeah.
And I think our advantage running this show is we're all adults, you know?
It's true. I think we all started much older than the average comic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I didn't start till I was, like, I started kind of, like, around my 30th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The class was kind of a gift to myself for that. Mm-hmm. Really.
Yeah. I was 33 when I started for, you know, the last year and a bit, year and change.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and we're invested, but we're not so invested. Like, it's not who we are.
Yeah. It's part, like, I want it to be good, but because it's only monthly, it's actually very easy to fit that into my life, where it's like,
yeah.
well, if we have to, like, really pound pavement on it, it's usually only for a few days, or,
sure.
like, to get intense with it. And generally, like the feedback on it has been so overwhelmingly positive. Like,
yeah.
people have been so, the comics really like it, the audience really likes it. The venue seems to really like it. I
yeah.
guess I don't really know, but like they certainly haven't given us any indication that they're in any way unhappy. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
so it's very symbiotic, I think.
And I'd say for me, and I would guess for you and Justin,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm not staving off an existential crisis in all our planning.
Yeah.
Like I can afford to be a little more pragmatic about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like if I make bad decisions when I'm super invested, you know?
Totally.
That's when...
Absolutely, yeah. We were able to have just enough emotional distance from it, I think, to,
yeah.
to still be able to look at it as a product that we're working on rather than ourselves.
Yeah.
And so that's quite... It's felt very healthy to me the whole time. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
this is a nice kind of stable thing in my life that has, like, some... It's not, like, all one color all the time kind of thing. Like, there's definitely different shades to the show running and to the working with other people, but it's almost all really fun for me. Like, I really enjoy
yeah.
all of it, pretty much. Even when I don't like it, I'm like, it's cool to, like, work things out with two people. Like,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you three have a good team dynamic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've worked on really dysfunctional teams, and I've worked on really amazing teams, like group projects or at work or,
yeah.
right.
you know, trying to run. I run a monthly show, or I used to, and I had to, like, hand that off because it was really hard to do it all by myself. And then you, like, have some other team members that then they drop out, and then you kind of, like, it all lands on you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you guys have kept it pretty stable.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
like...
It's funny how long it took us to land on the name Tricycle Comedy, because we were really floating a lot of other things, like Late Bloomer. I'm like, reminds me too much of not getting my period until I was almost 14.
Yeah.
I don't really want to...
But, like, the triad is the most stable geometric shape.
It's true.
It's yeah. very, yeah, it's a... and a tricycle's just so... Like, thinking about an adult riding a tricycle, that's just funny. It's funny. Like, it's a funny little idea.
Yeah.
I just always think of the Queen song, except that's bicycle.
I want to ride my tricycle.
yeah.
Too much singing in this episode, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But,
no.
Yeah. I didn't mean,
yeah, Katie.
Yeah, Katie.
Give it a rest.
It's fine.
Yeah.
but just, I think having three people also to work on a project is really awesome, because then there's never, like, there's always a tiebreaker if you need to make some decisions.
Yep. Totally.
You don't have to, if it's only two people, it can, like, get wrapped up in a weird, well, there's us two.
Yeah, and we're always wrapped up in a weird.
Yeah.
like, you don't really need to flush that
yeah.
out, flesh that out, because it's just true. Like,
yeah.
it's always wrapped up in some weirdness. We do fine.
Yeah.
But this is because we know each other so well.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're keeping something from me.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
but so having three people, I think, is nice, because then that also helps you keep maybe some emotional distance, too, because
mm-hmm.
it's like,
yeah.
it's not just like, this is my thing
yeah.
that I'm doing all by myself. It's like, I have my teammates.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
all kind of keeping tabs on each other and keeping
yeah.
ourselves, but it's not just two people doing their relationship thing.
Yeah.
There's a third person to kind of spread that out a
yeah.
little bit.
Right.
I don't know. It feels healthy.
Justin's more capable than the both of us, I think, at being able to be dispassionate about something, like, or to be able to just sort of, like, not
yeah.
that I can't, not that you can't, but just that, I don't know, I'm a very emotional person. Doesn't mean I can't do anything. Like,
of course.
I'm still very capable of getting stuff done.
Emotions,
but I'm like,
and leadership,
but sometimes
are not
I have to be like, I'm sad. Can someone just, like, pat me on the head for a second? Like, is that
yeah.
cool?
So. I think the big thing is hyper-focus.
Yeah.
Like, when you pick out the thing that is your problem.
Yeah.
Mm.
And, not you in particular.
No, just, but like, yeah. It could be me in particular. Sure, go for
it. But that, like, oh, this thing is the only thing that matters right now, mm-hmm. because it's the one that's bothering me, you know.
Someone else's perspective can help you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. someone else can sort of say, hey, let's not worry about that mm-hmm. right now. Let's move on to X or Y mm-hmm. or Z.
Exactly. In team meetings at work, we do the parking lot a lot, where it's like, okay, that is an important issue to you. We're going to put that in the parking lot, and if we have time, we'll get to it. But, like, nice. Right now, let's focus on, like, the important stuff.
Totally. Yeah. The parking lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, just, like, picture taking this tiny car of an idea, putting it over here, just valet parking it mm-hmm. for you.
It'll still be there, you know.
$10, please.
If only I could charge people
for their shitty ideas you have to do at the end. Oh, man, yeah. So, I mean, I like, yeah, doing comedy is fun, but I definitely am running the risk of letting it get tied up in my identity. I'm not competitive about it, which is sort of weird for how much, like, I want to do well at it. I'm only competitive with myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a competition this week. I don't really care if I win. I like to pretend, I bluster on social media and stuff like, I'm going to kick all your asses, but it's obviously not what I ate. Yeah. How I feel.
Ooh, be careful with that, because that obviously... not you, but I've definitely read people who I'm like, I know they meant that as a joke. I know they did.
And then other people.
But,
yeah.
Ooh, they might have been joking on the square a little bit. Like, yeah. It's hard to tell.
I think I just said it to Matty Vu, and I'm pretty sure he got it.
Perfect.
I think I was like, yeah. You're going down, Vu! He's fine. He just opened for fucking Chris Kattan out in Yuck Yuck's Abbotsford or
no
something.
Shit.
Like, I was like, he does stand-up was my first thing. I was like, oh, I hope you didn't wear, like, red overalls and messily eat an apple in front of him or something.
Huh.
Just trying to think, because I only think of him as a sketch actor who does weird, inappropriately sexual things. As yeah. Mr. Peepers or Mango.
Right. Or,
or one of the Butabi brothers.
Or ruins an otherwise fine movie.
Kel film.
I can't think of anyone in particular, but whenever Kattan enters it, I'm like, okay, this took a turn. That's mean.
Still kind of a get as an opener, I think. Just anybody yeah. whose name you
totally.
Recognize. It's exciting.
Totally. No, I'm excited for him and also jealous.
Which... When Chris Kattan asked me to open for him.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I don't know. It's so that's a really interesting parallel, then, to think about, like, comedy and academia and just, like, any... I guess that could happen with any job. Like, now I'm in politics. It's like I could just make that all of my...
Yeah.
personality to be like, I'm a political staffer and that's me and that's everything and like it could totally wrap me up in my whole
yeah.
personality, but luckily I like have a union job where they're like, go home at 4 and so then I'm done mm-hmm. and then I'm not even allowed to check my email or do anything. It's like the boundaries are very clear mm-hmm. which I like because
yeah.
then
yeah.
you have time to develop the rest of your personality so it doesn't just become
yeah.
your one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm a serial hobbyist,
mm-hmm.
which is, I will take up a hobby and get to the point where it requires energy and time to, like, master.
Yeah.
And then give it up and then go to something else where I can perform the,
just
like,
to have
learning
fun with
process.
It.
What are some previous?
Oh, I draw.
Cool.
You know, I play guitar.
Very cool.
I'm a more than adequate campfire chord basher, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But,
What?
You only need to know 4 chords, and then you can play every campfire.
Oh, campfire chord. I was like,
yeah.
like a cord of wood is what I was thinking. I'm like, oh, you're very strong then. You can just rip them apart
That's...
like Captain America.
Well, that too.
I am part bear.
You know, and little things. Like I did weightlifting for a while. Like,
nice.
But I like doing things, and I like learning things. My mm-hmm. problem is once I have to commit to it,
mm-hmm.
then it's a problem. Comedy so far has been the thing that, like, I can push past. I think a lot of it's the social aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, knowing good people who you can hang out with and get better with.
Yeah.
That does a lot for me.
Me
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
yeah. I think, honestly, my interactions with people are always about 90% positive. It's only, like, a couple assholes, and they never really ruin the whole thing. It kind of...
Yeah.
It's, like, just a little bit of flavor.
Yeah.
So it's teaching me skills.
Yeah.
Dealing with conflict and stuff, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. I hate conflict.
Nope.
Sucks. Ass.
Should we take a short little break
yeah,
and
sure.
then get back to our next little topic at hand?
Yeah.
Sure. And we're back. From outer space.
I just walked in to find you here, ready to podcast in this place.
I feel like we've done that, like, 3 times at least.
You know what? It's fine. Okay. Meredith can tell us if we have or not.
Right. You should maybe just start getting it so it's totally rote. Like,
yep, just every single time.
I just walk back to... I don't know the should lyrics should have
changed
well.
Those four locks on the door.
We have a very secure sea shanty shack because this thing is like, you know, it'll blow over in a gust of wind. We got to keep our shit secure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Basically. It looks rickety, but it's steel reinforced. Mm-hmm. Or something.
Just like our...
Don't come steal our crystals. And herbs.
I was going to say, like, rickety on the outside but strong on the inside is, like, the opposite of our personality.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It looks so strong on the outside, it's very rickety and tender on the inside.
We're very soft centers. Just nougat.
Which is why we need to start weightlifting, which we were discussing a little bit, getting beefy.
Yeah. I want to get soups beef.
Just, I want to be fat and buff. It'll be so good.
Fat, buff.
It's pretty fun. I was for a bit.
People are like, oh, you're tubby. You're like, but wait till I lift a couch in front of you.
Nice.
At my peak, I was squatting 300 pounds 5x5, which I feel pretty good about.
Holy shit. That's pretty amazing.
It was fun. Like, people stop and watch at a certain point.
I want to be able to squat 300 pounds. That'd be super. Was it pounds or kilograms?
Pounds.
It sounds way better. Mm-hmm. Be like 124 kilograms or something. Yeah. Doesn't sound that good.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's actually what that is, because that seems close. Yeah. I don't know. Let's never find out.
Quick math. It's like I was feeling like we were doing a lot of swimming in the ocean on Gabriola, and there was one beach that's like super wavy and sort of like fighting against the current, and I was like swimming really hard, and because like in Vancouver when I swim in the ocean I don't put my head under just because of the fecal coliform count, and I don't want to get ear infection. the ocean is kind of gross around here, you guys, but anyway.
But you go in anyway.
Yeah, because then you can shower after, but I just try to, like, not put my head under. Yeah. But then at Gabriel, I was, like, putting my head under and, like, swimming properly again, and I was like, oh, yeah, this actually moves my muscle groups in the proper way. I was, like, really, like, beating up my like, back and arms by, like, fighting against the current. It felt really good.
Mm-hmm. Nice,
and
yeah.
So you were saying that sometimes weightlifting can feel a bit, like, powerfully masochistic, where you're like, oh, this hurts and it's awesome.
I'm amazing.
It's
a weird, there is a high, but like calling it a high, it's so dumb that it's called a high.
It's definitely not as good as an actual high, probably.
But like endorphins are real, you know, you get those from exercise, and I just prefer to get them from like food and sex. Because it's much less work, it feels better, it's easier.
Summer.
When you start, like, the next day, you're kind of, like, walking around like a duck a little bit because your thighs are really sore. That weirdly feels good.
Yeah. I do like the soreness from exercise more than the soreness from lethargy.
Yes.
Because, like...
See, no kidding.
Do you know what I mean? Like, my back will hurt, like...
From doing nothing?
Yeah, I threw out my back because I was playing Sims for 2 days straight.
Yeah.
And I, like, got up and was like, ow! You know?
Such a good act out. I wish other people could have seen that.
I did live it, so yeah. I have the, yeah, just, the that's method
your real
acting.
Method, yeah, totally.
But if you're muscle sore, you're kind of aware of your body, which can be kind of good.
It kind of makes me feel like, oh, I feel so powerful and alive and leonine, and then, like, I'm just, like, prowling. I've been reading a lot of historical fiction this week.
Yeah.
That you could just copy and paste that in every week of my life, pretty much is what I'm doing. No, actually, I'm reading a future dystopia from Ms. Margaret Atwood right now. So, anyway, we were talking about lethargy feelings and sore legs from being unable to get up to rise from a toilet after peeing is really alarming, which has happened to me a few times after doing some squats. I'm like, I'm going to need to steel myself here. Like, I'm going to have to, like, pull the towel rack off the wall to get back up or something.
Mm-hmm. Or you just accept that the next 2 seconds are going to be intensely painful.
Yeah, and you just do what you got to do. You go, like, everything, is it burning? Very much.
But I do like that, being aware of your body because your muscles have been, like, in use and stuff. It feels really good. And then I forget that feeling feels really good, and then I, like, let it kind of dissipate. Oh, okay, now my muscles don't hurt anymore, and then I go back into lethargy, and then I, like, do some more exercise, and it's like, everything hurts again, and I know that if I just keep doing that, then it will eventually just feel normal, and it'll be okay, but it's really hard to push past that, because it's hard, and it sucks.
So where I'm at right now, when you were talking about the hurting yourself from lethargy, and you'd rather eat than work out, because it give you endorphins anyway. Like, I'm like, that's my whole fucking summer. Mm-hmm. I had such high hopes for myself, as I always do, and I realized, like, oh, I don't like to sweat, and I'm already so sweaty, which has been this whole summer. It's been so hot, I don't have summer clothes. Yep. I'm not built for it. being a thick milkshake, as it were.
Would you ever get into the, I'm already sweaty because it's summer, so I may as well exercise?
I should.
Stuff?
If I had better habits, then yeah, I would just mostly, I'm like, I just want to wash my face, is how I've been feeling through the whole summer, because I just, like, feel like oil just, like, forming and just shiny. Just I'm, a shiny, shiny person.
That, flashes
not like a special
me.
Pokemon. Just shiny.
That gives me, like, a flashback to my driver's test. Oh, my God.
Getting your picture taken after?
My first, yeah, driver's license photo was just, like, an oil slick. Just with painful pimples everywhere. You like the ones that hurt?
Teenage boy.
I did it.
Hair plastered against my forehead. Just...
It's. Are you from BC originally? Or?
I am, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
It's pretty rare. Yep. These days, I was just gonna go, like, did you have to do the whole, I don't know how much older than me you'd have to have missed the whole NL training.
I sure did miss that.
Oh, you got it just before?
Just right under the wire.
Oh, okay, because there was someone I grew up with who was 3 years older than me, did it, like, the week before the graduated licensing came into place.
I think if I'd gotten it the day I turned 16, I think, I would have had, like, a year to play with.
Okay.
But I didn't pursue it that quickly, so I did have to schedule, like, in the final 2 weeks to get...
yeah.
To not get the N.
I failed my first driver's test, but I passed the second one. I've known a lot of people who failed, like, 9 times.
Yeah.
And now they have their driver's license, and like, I'll take the bus! Thanks. I don't want to die here. So the shininess, the whole, like, already feeling gross and, like, not wanting to be visible becoming even more gross, like, in the moment.
Yeah.
Like, not thinking about the end game, but always thinking about how I'm going to feel while I'm doing it. It puts me off because I'm like, if one other person comes into my building's gym when I'm in there, if I get there and it's empty and someone else comes in, the flash of anger I feel is so borderline psychotic. Like, I imagine putting my hands around their neck and squeezing.
Oh, my God.
I'm not kidding. I'm like, how fucking dare you come and see me at this vulnerable point in my life. Like, I'm so furious about it. But the thing is that most of the other people in my building are not conscientious people when it comes to this thing. They'll come in, they'll turn both of the TVs on full blast. So if I'm listening to a podcast or whatever, like, Canada's Worst Drivers or Border Patrol is going to come blasting through. And they'll just, like, go from one machine to the other, not wipe any of them down, and just, like, take up the whole space.
So not only are they, like, taking up your space, but the inconsiderateness, which you and I rail against a lot, where
which
it's, like...
It makes me, like I said, so angry. I am not gonna ever act out in violence, but I think about it a lot. Please don't arrest me. I get so mad. I'm like, it's the same way I feel when I'm commuting in the morning, because it's already unpleasant. I already don't want to do it. And other people can see me and be around me and are doing their own thing as if they don't know, as if they don't care that they're making me even more miserable than I already am. So when somebody, like, hits me in the face with their backpack when I'm sitting on a bus or a SkyTrain, I'm just like, I will end you. I will end your life. I will make your mother weep at your graveside.
I get into those tizzies where it's like, how dare this person not even do this? Because, like, I feel like I would anticipate the need and, like, not do that and be, like, over-considerate, right? But then it's like, I need to realize that people can't read my mind and they don't know that this is making me mad.
They fucking should, though, Chris. They should.
I know. But, like, I'm trying to take the healthier approach to that where it's like, just let it go. Like, they're just doing their own thing. And maybe even if that person was rude to me or whatever, they are going through their own shit. It has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
It's a hard lesson to learn and keep practicing, but I don't know. Whatever. This is just what we were going to talk about.
unhealthy coping is definitely a good thing to talk about because, like, I've been getting into these situations where I am not calming myself down. I'm just, like, letting myself get really bent out of shape with, like, being angry about stuff like that or, like, someone being mean to me over, like, something I said on the internet or something. Mm-hmm. Like, that just jacks me right up and I just want to do something that has... 100% success rate of making me feel better, doesn't cost a lot, and doesn't require anyone to see me in a vulnerable state. Mm-hmm. So eating, pretty much. Like, I eat a lot of shitty, terrible food, and I hope we can talk a little bit about that. I know in our first episode with Emily White, we definitely talked about comfort food quite a bit, but I think talking about the actual dimensions of, like, the shame around it. Like, Kyle, your comedy is so good for this. I don't want to, like, make you do your bits, but you have a couple bits about food and food shame that hit me so fucking hard that the crying that I'm doing while I'm laughing is, like, mostly because it's funny, and also the, like, 25% because, like, I identify with it so strongly that it's just, like, did you set up a secret camera? Have you been watching me? I just feel so recognized by
it,
you know?
Oh, that's beautiful. No, I just lived the same life, I think.
Yeah.
Well, you know, give or take some details.
Being like a fat, tender child.
Yeah.
Growing up in... Where did you grow up? Like, where in BC did you grow up?
Vernon.
Oh, right. I did actually know that about you.
Yeah. Which I like to say was a good place to grow up and a better place to leave.
Yes. Yeah. That is... Yeah. I've heard that.
Yeah.
More people leave Vernon than Kelowna, so I've definitely known more cool people from Vernon than Kelowna. Yeah. No offense, Kelowna.
All offense, Kelowna.
Vernon, Penticton, Kelowna are like a Mexican standoff of, like, my town's better than your town.
Yeah. Every small town has its neighbor rivalry, basically.
Yeah. Oh, except, like, I only encounter that rivalry with people who stayed.
Yes.
Mm. Like, I have a friend, I met his brother who stayed in Kelowna. And I sort of put out there, like, oh, I'm from Vernon. Yeah, so we have some shared history. It was an olive branch. And he was
right.
Like, Vernon, what a piece of trash place. And I was like, you're not better.
Like, I left Vernon also.
you don't win this. Kelowna's a bigger place. It's got a lot going for it, but it also has some things going against it.
Mm-hmm. Just a handful.
Just a handful.
Just a handful.
Mostly orange people. Oversized orange people, like Oompa Loompas who do P90X.
Oh my god. Oh, this is, yep. Yeah, my brother-in-law lives there. And that's where I got the idea for the joke about giving myself the nickname. Because one of the guys at the wedding I was talking to, so like, I'm never going to remember, because he's had his wedding in Kelowna, sorry, I didn't make that clear.
Yeah.
I was talking to one of his friends at the bar. And he's like, what's your name? Anyway, it's like, oh, yeah, I know I'm Kaylee's sister-in-law. My name's Katie. And he's like, there's no way I'm going to remember that. I was like, okay, fine. Don't know why you asked. I was like, you could just call me Big Red. And he's like, oh, no, I can't call you that. I can never call you that. Big is the worst thing you could call a woman. I'll just call you Cool Bitch instead. And I wanted to do that as a joke. And then I was getting a bunch of notes like, oh, Cool Bitch isn't mean. It's not mean enough. I'm like, yeah. But it's what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just literally the truth. Which maybe makes it not a joke, but but that definitely happened. I was like, oh, right, they're a little bit skewed up here.
I think Cool Bitch works.
Cool Bitch. By the way. But it doesn't really describe me visually.
Right, not for you, but as the joke, I think.
I like that Luna, again, our creator of all the fine art we have, aside our podcast, tagged me in a reference to The Simpsons that... Oh, I can't believe Katie played Tattoo Annie on The Simpsons. She's a real inspiration.
Oh, right.
And so there's like, there's a picture of Tattoo Annie. I was like, Jesus Christ, I really look like Tattoo Annie.
With the Mad Magazine
fold-in tattoo. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, nobody remembers my first big role. I'm going to have to put her picture in the roundup, I think, because it looks a lot like me, to be honest.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, so being a chubby kid growing up in Vernon,
it's an athletic town.
Yeah.
A lot of outdoor activities. I was an indoor cat.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sports.
So, I just stayed inside with my brother, played a lot of video games, and, Which is funny, because my brother's quite thin.
Hmm.
But just,
that's
you know,
not fair.
Yeah. Well, it's fine.
My oldest brother was an actual international model.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. But Chris and I are always like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, I guess we're the funny ones.
Right. But that's actually what happened in elementary school was I got in with the group of cool boys. Actually, there were four.
Just cool little rowdy boys.
Well, yeah. There was four of us, and I was the funny one.
Cool.
You know, you get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we competed on grades. It was a weird little thing.
Hmm. But cool kids getting good grades.
Yeah. But
in
always...
elementary school, it sort of was that.
Yeah. Because, yeah, you could be... it was either that or be a bad kid. You remember the bad kids?
Oh, yeah.
Which was a weird category. Smoking.
I remember sixth graders smoking at my elementary school. I was like, oh, no.
Or, like, having ADD. You know,
undiagnosed ADD.
Undiagnosed ADD. Yeah,
just like carving that Stussy S into the top of their desk with their compass.
Yeah, yeah. That kid's weird. He's bad. I'm not endorsing this point of view.
But that was how you categorize things in elementary school, of course. It's fairly black and white.
Yeah. Yeah, like not me in particular, but it was like it was in the ether. Mm-hmm. We all knew. bad Chris. I don't know.
Hey.
Yeah. Right. I,
not you.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. Maybe you a little bit.
No, I was a very good kid.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pathologically good, because that was me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to do anything. Not okay.
I was also pathologically well-behaved. I was terrified of making my parents mad, so I never really acted out.
Yeah.
I would, to defy my parents, I would have to have, like, a business presentation. Have I talked about this before on the podcast?
No.
If we ever do the mommy issues episodes that we were talking about doing, getting our moms on, I'm sure my mom would, she's very proud of this about me, so that if ever I wanted something growing up, whether it was, like, a facial piercing or a pet, or, like, a toy, or so, or, like, to go to a camp or something like that, I would have to, like, basically put together a PowerPoint presentation for them and then argue why I should get it. Here's why. Here are some of the concerns you may have, and here are my refutations of those concerns. Like, I would give them basically a Duotang folder with, like, this is why I should be allowed to get a guinea pig.
Huh.
Basically.
I think that's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
You have to do your research and then be accountable.
And then she would just say no anyway.
Ah. Brenda. Come on.
But it's fine. Joke's on her. I just went and got my face pierced without permission because I always looked older than I was.
I want to make a pun on Dragon's Den.
I know, right?
Dragon's Kindergarten?
No.
It's a bit of a reach. Walk. Yeah. Bit of a walk.
I was thinking, like, Tiger Mom? No, my mom was not a Tiger Mom. She's like, you want to quit that? Great. I don't have to drive you there anymore.
Oh, I feel like that's going to be the kind of mom that I'm going
to
be.
Oh, my God. I'm like, you don't have to do anything if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Which is probably not a good thing to say to your child. Yeah. You can just stay in my basement forever, baby. Shit. So, yeah. The feelings eating, I was an only child. I mean, I have siblings, as I said. Like, I have two brothers, but they're so much older than me. We never... So old. They're very, very old. They're incredibly elderly. So we did not grow up together. And I was home alone a lot, and my parents... Oh, one presentation I gave them was that, hey, I got my babysitting certificate. I'm 11. I shouldn't have to go to daycare anymore, because if I can babysit a baby, I could babysit me. That was the one time they said yes.
Cool.
They're like, great, well, we don't have to pay for daycare anymore. Yeah, here's a house key. Now you're a latchkey kid.
Yeah, I loved being a latchkey kid.
And that was definitely when I started getting fat for real. Because at daycare, the snacks come out pretty evenly, and they're balanced, whatever. Like, maybe we had President's Choice mac and cheese for lunch, but then we had fruit cocktail for a snack, right? So staying home alone... Also, 11 was, like, kind of when puberty starts, so you start putting body fat on anyway, and I quit swimming at the same time. So, a perfect storm. and my parents shopped at Costco a lot, so we'd get Costco-sized boxes of Pizza Pops and Rice Krispies treats and chocolate-covered dips granola bars and all kinds of stuff, like anything that was prepackaged, because I didn't know how to cook at that age, right? Yeah. I would get up at, like... On summer vacation, I'd get up at, like, 11:30 and put on The Puzzle Place or, like, children shows that were way too young for me at the age that I was. I'd put on, like, Big Comfy Couch and be like, yeah, Lunette, you do those clock stretches. Do you remember that show?
Yes, I do.
Yep.
The weird doll.
But so,
clown,
like,
girl.
It sounded like you were...
And
so...
I would just eat, like, 3 Pizza Pops for lunch.
Yeah, because it was available.
Yeah.
But then did it...
I didn't have friends.
So, yeah, did it start to become, like, a, now I'm sad... I want to eat this food.
Bored, or lonely, or any number of, like, any emotion that was other than positive could definitely, and even positivity, like, I my friends corroborate this story. I can't believe it's true, but I used to, as, like, a 13 or 14-year-old, when I finally started making friends, oddly enough, through the church, I got all the bad kids at church became my friends, because I wasn't really raised in a religious family. I just, like, went to youth group.
Right.
And so all the bad kids were like, oh, cool, you're secular, so come and, like, smoke roaches with us. Pretty much like, I'm 13, that sounds great.
I love that distinction. Yeah, you're secular.
You're like, secular. You know what sex is. Come on and let's hang out and, like, listen to Nirvana a lot.
Sweet.
In my cool attic bedroom. Those were the friends that I had. And, if we were going to watch a movie, we would buy snacks. Or, like, if I had people over to my house because we watch movies in my basement, I'd get, like, a big bag of nacho Doritos for everyone else and then the same size bag of Cool Ranch for myself to share with no one. So Cool Ranch Dorito remains my ultimate shame food.
Wow. Because
it is foul-smelling. Like, no one wants to kiss you if you've just any Dorito, but especially a Cool Ranch. Like,
they smell a bit like
flavor. They smell a lot like feet, in fact. Probably taste a lot like feet, too, to be honest.
Yeah.
But once I start, I can't stop. I'm like, ugh, take me out to the open range or Cool Ranch. Like, I'm going to ride into the sunset on a wave of savory flavor. So, like, that and Swedish berries. Like, those would be the things that I would just, like, hoard and eat. Like, I would just, tipping out. I remember watching Porky's in my basement with a friend, and like the feeling of like the specific sense memory of tipping back the crumbs of and the Cool Ranch Dorito dust into my mouth and going like, good.
Swedish berries, I'll eat well past the point where I hate them.
Oh yes,
where you're just punishing them. This now tastes like candle wax.
Yeah,
but I'm still going.
Yeah. It's like the outside of a Baby Bell. I won't stop.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's more in the bag. Mm-hmm. So
I'm realizing that, too. If it's just there and it's given to me, I will just keep eating it. Like, we had so much junk food on the camping trip. And so, like, the kids would just keep handing me Twizzlers. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to keep eating these. Like, they taste, like candle wax.
Yeah.
But here we go. Like, I'm trying to, I've developed a good flavor palette in terms of, like, I'm a foodie, bougie asshole. Mm-hmm. So, like, I try to, like... Sometimes I need to counter my, like, emotional eating with sanctimoniousness to be like, this isn't, like, delicious, organic,
I roasted some kale and had a salmon. And...
Yeah, so it's, like, because I cook really good food that's healthy and flavorful, but, like, when I talk about it, I sound like such an insufferable douchebag.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's the only way that I can break
through.
I find
you very sufferable, in fact.
Thanks. But, like, but that's the only way that I can, like...
That's, like, the sweetest statement that sounds the worst. Yeah. I would suffer you all day.
You notice I didn't refute the douchebag part. No, I don't think you are.
But sometimes that sanctimoniousness is the tool that I use, like,
sure.
to at least get me over the hump of, like, okay, I've got to stop eating this crap because it's not gourmet, blah, 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 blah. Because otherwise I will just, like, eat craft dinner all day.
All day, every day.
But I know my relationship to food is, like, my mom's a great cook, and as, from about the age of 12 on, she had me cooking for the family, where she would leave instructions, like recipes, and kind of, like, she'd leave out the chicken legs overnight and let them thaw and say, okay, well, do this, this, and this, and I'd do it. So I learned how to do that. But, so I love food. Food is love for me. Like, it's...
Yeah, you put, like, together this beautiful thing for your friends, your family, like...
Yeah,
I put my love inside of you. Basically.
Sure.
In a much less terrifying way.
I know. Well, it's there, isn't it? But, like, yeah, I cook for my partner, and I don't think she realizes how much importance I put in it, like, that it's delicious and that it's... She would just eat, nutrient-based, for
Soylent.
Sure.
Oh, my God, this is too... Kyle, are you sure we weren't separated as siblings, as young children? I believe is the word.
Could be, but
there's too many similarities there.
Yeah, so you put so much love and, like, so much emotional, like, input into your food.
Yeah, like, making sure the sear is there, like, understanding what umami is and stuff like that.
Balance. Things.
I do think the culinary world is trying to make us all sound like perverts. Between umami and mouthfeel, like, it's just...
Mouthfeel is the worst word.
It sounds so gross.
So gross. You could just say, it's fucking texture is all it means, basically.
Yeah.
It's like this custard has a great mouthfeel. Like, it's smooth. Like, that's what you're telling me.
And I just pictured the food against the side of your cheek.
You're saying that, like, putting lots of love into the food and you're learning all these, like, culinary terms.
Yeah, but, techniques to make sure that it's good. So, I put a lot of value in it. Mm-hmm. But it also means that when I'm down, I'm definitely looking for... 1,000 calories to inject into my body in the most, like weaponized delivery system possible. Like,
please, any example, millions of examples would be very wonderfully illustrative.
Yeah, well, I have a joke or a bit, but it's just true that whenever my partner leaves town, I go to Dairy Queen. Mm-hmm. It just, like, immediately happens for soft serve and, like, fudge and peanuts, just fat and easy carbs, just immediately. Cafeteria style Chinese food.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Oh my God. Like, from a food court.
Yeah.
Like, just the worst kind of Chinese.
Oh,
like,
my God.
From a small town buffet in the heart of Kamsack, Saskatchewan or something.
I like
to get my Chinese food from the train station.
I think I am a gourmand, though, in the mm-hmm. sense that, like, I love good, well-prepared food, but I also love the bullshit, you know? Like,
I feel so attuned to you spiritually.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
it's I'll do the same. I'll cook for my partner, and like I really love, like, oh, I'll spend like 5 hours making a soup out of like the bones of the fish that we caught in the river, and then I made this amazing chowder and blah blah blah, and then as soon as he leaves town, like, he's a vegetarian or pescatarian, so right. I'll like make a sausage and just like eat it with yeah. like dipping yeah. it in ketchup, you
like,
know?
I was gonna say, like, I've seen, oh, like, we've done that together. Yeah. So like when we've had sleepovers, it's like, all right, sausages and onions and yeah. like just like things that aren't bad necessarily, mm-hmm. but they're greasy and smelly
and
a little
meaty
bit.
And like, but yeah, or like when I cook for myself, like if nobody else is around, then I just don't care as much. And I it's like, is yeah. it a self-love thing where it's like I want to create this beautiful spread mm-hmm. for my partner to be like, I love you so much, look at all this beautiful stuff that I made, or for yeah. friends. Mm-hmm. And then for me, I'm like, you only deserve a Kraft dinner,
yeah,
or something. Like when I like get fancy and treat yeah. myself, I usually do cook myself something very fancy, like, ooh, I'll slow cook a whatever.
Right.
But that's when I'm like really feeling myself. Yeah. But most of the time, it's like,
do you do it for the feedback? Do you think? Because I feel like I maybe do. I need feedback way too much.
I'm getting better at that, just because I don't get a lot of feedback for my cooking in general. It's I have a very
and
like
just,
he loves food, like he's yeah. very appreciative of it, but he's also not very vocal. So to me, the love is he'll go back for seconds, you know, yeah. like, so I feel the appreciation very much,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
but I don't know. I think some of it is for the recognition. When I make, yeah. like, fancy shit,
yeah.
like, really fancy shit, where it's, like, at my birthday party, I always make, like, little, like, amazing little finger foods and stuff for people,
yeah.
that I want the appreciation for, because that takes a long time.
Definitely, that's when I see it in you, is whenever you're having, because you're an excellent host. Mm-hmm. Like, you love to throw a party.
Yeah.
And you do it up. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to, I mean, I've definitely seen it stress you out on a few occasions, but most of the time, it's just kind of, you're so excited about, like, I can't wait till you see my croquembouche. It's going to be so good.
It was epic.
It was amazing,
fucking
honestly.
Cream puff tower, man.
Nice.
It's brought in by a beautiful pregnant woman, and I was like, oh my God, is that like a fertility ritual or something? Like, that's what it looked like. It was
has
so
to be.
Golden and like
covered in caramel.
Sticky
yeah.
and beautiful. Ooh. Like, it was so, it was a gorgeous. Ooh. And I hate cream puffs. And I still ate like three of them.
How can you huh. hate cream
I don't
puffs?
Like custard or cream.
Is it
or,
the mouthfeel?
It's the mouthfeel.
Yeah.
I don't right. like pudding. The only thing that I do like that is creme brulee, and it's because it has a crust on it. Like, it has to have something hard on it so
oh,
for me to eat it. Like, I don't like, I would never eat pudding. The fact that I like yogurt is beyond me. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
It's just because I'm a woman and you have to eat Activia or you, Jamie Lee Curtis kills you.
Well, it's just so hilarious, I've been led to understand.
What? Yogurt! So good! Yeah. Did you eat my key lime pie, your plate? Sorry, Marie Bamford. Yeah, though, the fucking pudding, I just never would. That was, like, the least relatable thing to me in Stranger Things is when they lost their minds over pudding. In one yeah. of the episodes, I was like, don't want it. Don't care. Gross.
I get it.
It's gooey. Sick.
But you were asking about, like, does it stress me out or do I want the feedback? Or
yeah,
or...
well, like, I think that's when it's, when I've observed it at its sort of zenith for you is, like, please tell me how cool this looks kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I definitely, like, because your 25th birthday was such a fucking off the chain experience. Like, it was better than a lot of weddings I've been to.
Nice.
I rented a hall and got a caterer and shit.
It was the most beautiful example of self-indulgence I've ever seen in my life, and I salute you forever for it, because it was a great time.
But every year, like, for my birthday, I will, because it's around Christmas, so I'll, like, bake a whole bunch of stuff, and I'll make a whole bunch of little, like, bite-sized treats, and that to me is, like, again, sharing that kind of emotional,
yeah,
like, just love with my friends, yeah. and I only do that once a year. Like, mm-hmm. I don't ever bake. I don't make little fiddly yeah. finger food shit ever,
mm-hmm.
except for once a year. So that's
December's truly the fattening.
Yeah,
it is.
That's traditional. That's, like, how you should if
you
want to
hibernate for the rest of the
yeah,
year.
Yeah, if you want to live your life in a, like, seasonal kind of way. Like, I feel like I'm yeah. in tune with the earth's rhythms, and I just eat a lot in the winter,
sure.
and I feel like that's what you do.
Yeah, definitely. I love to impress people. I haven't been doing a lot of cooking lately because of the same thing you were saying about your partner is that mine loves good food and is so appreciative when I make something. Like, she's so, like, thank you so much for showing. She says, thanks for making this, babe. And I was like, that's automatic. You don't really like it. You don't really care.
No.
She's like,
oh, no.
Please trust me, I do.
Oh, no.
I would maybe be dead if you didn't feed me all
take,
the time.
Take yes for an answer.
Right? Like, oh, I'm such a fucking idiot. But I'm so cute and nice, so people let me get away with it. Yeah. But I think that, like, I could make not great food and she'd still be really appreciative. Like, maybe right. not Soylent, but, yeah. like, if I just made, like, pancakes for dinner, she'd be thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Like, I'm pretty chill about it, but... I'll occasionally, one of the few times I'll get, like, actually angry is if I've just completely fucked the execution on something.
Oh,
like,
same.
Like, if you...
I get so upset.
Oh.
So upset.
I was making fish tacos once, and I put it, like, breaded fish, mm-hmm. and I was putting in the oil, and all the breading would just, like, completely peel off of it, mm-hmm. and I was, like, so furious with the world and myself.
Oh, boy.
That I was bad company.
every
single
I can think of three times in the last like 2 years where I've made an inedible meal.
Yeah.
I cried every single time. Yeah. Like fear, like hot tears of fury mm-hmm. is how wrapped up in it I get.
Yeah. Well, like I'm not a perfectionist. Like food's food. If it's good, it's good. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be.
But if an element that you were concerned about doesn't come together, yeah. it's very, very it's, unsettling.
It's, I don't know.
It ruins the experience for you.
It yeah. kind of rocks me.
Yeah. I love, like, presentation with food, and, like, if something, right. if I'm cooking something, like, I made a frittata, it doesn't fucking matter what it looks like, but in the pan, it was, like, the most perfect shape. It was gonna come out, it was gonna look so good, but the top just wasn't quite cooking well enough, so I was like, I'll flip it. Oh, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
So I flipped it, and it all fell apart, and I was like, gah.
Now it's a scramble.
Yeah, it yeah. tasted delicious, but it didn't have that perfect shape that I wanted, and I was really sad about it.
Yeah. Were you cooking it in a cast iron pan?
No.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Just in, like, a nice nonstick.
Hmm.
It just didn't flip right.
I think maybe you have to put it under the broiler.
Don't tell me what to do.
So fair. Totally fair. Totally fair. I love a well placed don't tell me what to do.
That actually made me a little mad. I was like, I dealt with the crisis, Katie. Now you're bringing it back up with advice.
That's totally fair.
No.
Don't tell me what to do. It's long digested at this point, Catherine.
Yeah.
That's the exasperated name.
Oh,
if you're mad at me, call me Catherine.
Yeah. But so, yeah, so then just, like, that sort of emotional investment in the food that we create for other people
mm-hmm.
is really important, and then it gets, like, it fucks me up if it doesn't come out right or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, when I'm cooking for myself, I just don't share that same kind of care and concern.
No.
Yeah.
I eat like a caveman if I'm eating by myself. Like, last night I spent the whole night by myself, and I was just, like, I just cooked a chicken breast and put together, like, one of those sweet kale salads that you get everywhere, right? Like, the ones with the poppy seed and the...
Right.
Yeah, those ones. I was just like, oh, it's a pesto chicken breast from the grocery store.
That doesn't sound
store.
Like eating like a caveman.
No, but I'm not finished. So I just, like, basically cooked the chicken. I was like, I could plate this. And I didn't even look for tongs. I just put my hands in and just, like, started tossing it all together. Just like, okay. Just started eating the whole salad with my hands. I was just like, you know what? I was already going to have to wash my hands anyway, so let's just keep it up.
Does that mean it's paleo?
Totally.
Yeah,
I mean, well, aside from the huge amount of sugar in the dressing, I'm sure.
No, but because you're eating like a caveman.
Oh, yeah. No, I got it. I was like, I was just trying to think it on two levels.
I didn't
like, it's basically paleo.
I didn't think you gave that joke. It's dude. Just
I just assume paleo is like when you get a plate of ribs so big it tips your car over.
Oh, that's beautiful. I like that. That's a good mental image. Every paleo blog I've ever read, if I was an actor and I needed to get angry for a role, I'm just like, all right, I'm going to pull up Nom Nom Paleo and just look at some of the write-ups this uppity asshole has written.
Okay, so, like, I'm a big, like, foodie gourmand, whatever, but then I also do get angry about, like, certain diets and, like, oh,
yeah.
this is, like, raw, vegan, blah, blah. It's like, I actually love all of that food.
Yeah.
And I love all the paleo things, like, so on, because I'm on Pinterest
sure.
a lot, because they have great recipes, and I love the visual layout. I don't need to justify it. I'm totally justifying it, and I got very defensive at myself. But I try to, like, delete all the captions that go with stuff, because it's always like, oh, the amazing, clean eating, skinny noodles, with your fucking paleo this, and the raw vegan that, and I'm like, this looks delicious, why'd you have to ruin it with those words?
Zoodles used to mean something different.
Oh, I know that. Bothers me a lot. Or like when they say I've got nice cream instead of ice cream.
Or
like,
it's like fucking smushy ass banana.
And I'm like, why
Dick holes.
Why don't you call it like ice dream or something. Like, they have a thing called rice dream. Like, it's not cream, so why'd you call it nice cream? You're just trying to... Are you saying that you're better than me? This is, like, better. My cream is nicer than yours because I'm raw vegan. Like, So it just feels inherently judgy. Sorry.
No worries. I have the most perverse respect for the person who figured out, oh, it's not mayo. It's aioli. Like, that branding is so, like, disgustingly effective.
Like, you just said garlic into it while you were whipping it up, and then it became something better than regular mayo.
But I was looking for a salad recipe, like a particular pairing of ingredients, I don't remember what, and my Google search returned one that was, it was an enlightened salad, like the enlightened, you know, lettuce
like
and whatever salad.
Like, Thich Nhat is going to bring it to you or something?
Yeah, and... Like, I don't get that angry in life, but I definitely, like, I hit a simmer with that one.
I'm going to not eat that on principle.
Yeah.
Just out of spite.
You know, I'm sure it signed off with namaste. Like, I'm just sure.
My salad recognizes your salad.
Oh, my God.
Well, okay, so that, it brings me back to sort of what we were talking about academia and comedy. It's like, if you see somebody else, like, leave that because they are doing something different, it, like, threatens your worldview. Like, why is it that I feel like when someone's doing, like, a food thing, it's, like, judging me, it's threatening me and my lifestyle or my...
I don't know.
It's just whenever I see somebody posting about, like, oh, I'm doing this special diet or I'm doing this, it just feels like, why are you judging me? And it's like, they're not, Chris. Yeah. Like, it's not fucking about you at all. Let people do their own thing.
Yeah.
But it just makes me feel like, because does it, I don't know.
In my memory, I'm like, did we start talking about this off podcast before we started recording? Because, because I'm like, did we already talk about this?
No, that's why I brought it back up.
That's, I'm so glad you did. I really shot myself in the foot a bunch of times this week. Like, I got mean to people this week. I told my brother that I couldn't wait till he got fat again, because he lost, like, 50 pounds doing some kind of diet thing. And I, like, remember him going, like, oh, I can't have bread today. Bread's tomorrow, or something like that. And I was just like, ugh. No, but they're very healthy. They're super active. And I just, like, it just makes me think about everything I already feel like I'm failing at. And it's not about me.
Yeah.
It's never been about me. It's not, nobody gives a fuck. Like, nobody looks at me and goes, and if they do, they're really sick. Like, if someone goes to me like, oh, she's fat, she's immoral and needs to, like, be run off the face of the earth or just at least go for a fucking run, tubbo. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's thinking that.
Most people don't think that. Yeah.
Most people don't think that. And if they do, they have much bigger problems than I do even. So... Yeah.
For me, the big problem, I'm not that concerned about how other people are eating or how that reflects on me, but I do know in my life the difference between eating something bad because I get to, and it's like a little...
Like a treat?
Yeah, it's a treat, and the difference between that and just eating something awful because I don't want to feel a thing. Is so slight, and I don't really know when I've tipped over all the time.
Oh, Kyle.
This is so relatable. Like, oh, God.
Like, yeah, the number of times I've had a two-item Chinese combo and watched Let's Plays on YouTube for an hour when I should be writing my dissertation. Oh, my God. And that's just... that's
hard
just looking for... For a quick shot of comfort.
Right? Because it really does pacify you. Like, there are nerve endings in our stomach that's connected to anxiety and feelings and, like, all kinds of stuff. So you load it full, something very heavy, and it's like you just put a Thich blanket on top.
Wow. Throw a blanket over it.
Oh, my God.
And then your nerves don't get all jangly anymore. It literally calms everything down. Like, the gut, like, brain emotional connection is, like, super real.
Yeah.
And I think, like, just fat and sugar and salt, like, on an immediate level
hits
goes
all
boom,
the things in your brain.
Right into the pleasure center.
Yeah.
Thinking, like, summer has got me into a series of, you know, a healthy habit is something you do, like, on the reg, and I'm like, oh, I guess a nightly Cornetto is not a healthy habit, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's so, like, it's got the carby, like, bready feeling in the cone crust. Like, no, that's not it. It's got the ice cream part. I always get the stuff that has the caramel core, so it's just, like, caramel coming right out, like, salty, gooey, sweet but also fatty caramel, like with peanuts and chocolate, and it's always like, oh, this is everything I need in one package. And it does, it's just like, hey, those that you jangling nerve endings, it's like It's like ripping off the wind chimes from your patio or whatever. It just stops. The sound just stops. Mm-hmm. And you're comfortable and it's quiet inside of you.
I remember reading like a lot of... Okay, so my master's project was on weight bias. So, oh, like, okay. Looking at, like, yeah. How people's weight is perceived and how people are discriminated. And, yeah, how that is framed as, like, this huge panic and
yeah.
It's not really, and, like, how weight and health aren't, like, as interconnected as people think that it is, but it's more of, like, a symptom. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I looked more at, like, the institutional discrimination against people that are overweight, basically. Which is a big thing.
Yeah.
So, but I also wound up reading a whole bunch of other studies that were, like, looking at these connections between, like, gut and... Because if you're overweight and then you're discriminated against and you're stressed out, it makes you eat more. So, basically, yes. My thesis yeah. was don't treat people like shit and they won't get... No. They won't get more worse. Unhealthy. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Why don't you just be nice?
And I think that's even the current idea of how to deal with just addiction, like mm-hmm. drug addiction is... Yeah. When it's illegal and you're a criminal, every time you do a drug, you're going to get addicted. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, because you're going to feel bad and then you're going to need to soothe that with yeah. more of the thing. Yeah. But what was I even going to say? Shit. I don't remember what that was about.
I have a question I want to ask you okay. guys.
Yes.
So while you're trying to remember, what are your compromises when you're feeling eating? Because
okay.
I have an example.
Please.
I get the full Delicio pizza. I cook it up. And then I eat the whole thing without the crusts. I stop at the crusts. Because that's not all. It's not the full thing. And I also don't like the crusts as much. Because, like, you want the stuff with all the saucy, cheesy, yeah. whatever.
I love the crusts because I have... like the fat ranch dressing that I dip them in, and then
oh
it's a treat.
No!
You know what? The weirdest fucking thing Tessa does. My beautiful wife. I'm just selling her fucking out right
oh,
now.
No.
No, it's weird. And every time she does it, I'm like, don't let someone see you do that because you're a raccoon. You're my beautiful little trash panda. Because she'll take the crusts and just dip it in whatever she's drinking, whether that's Pepsi or water or milk or. Gin and tonic, like, I don't know.
Wow.
She'll dip it in, like, Coke especially. She'll just dip it in soda and, like, eat it. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, they're hard. It's chewy. Like, I don't know. No one has ever called you out on this. Like, it's a very weird thing that she does, but it's actually, now I think it's really cute.
Does she have an Italian background? I feel like,
yeah, because
no.
dip the bread in the red wine and...
Yeah, no. and biscotti.
No.
That's exactly what that's for.
Mm-hmm. No.
Oh.
No, she's just part raccoon.
Yeah.
I think. It's pretty funny to watch, but the compromises mm-hmm. in food. My thing is that I think that if I add a salad to it, it's fine. Whatever
right.
I have, even if it's like, even if I'm having like a full plate of fries and a burger, if I have salad too, that's like
yeah.
an undo button. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like,
which... Not quite.
No, it's yeah. more calories. Even yeah. just eat the fucking thing you want to have. And that's like, that's something I've been, I don't know if I brought, I feel like I probably brought her up before, but Janine Roth is a writer on, it's very gendered. Her stuff is like mostly writing towards women because it's like mostly women who struggle with their weight. Not that that women are more fat than men, but women have more shame about it, I think, like culturally, mm. not to an individual, but do you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. there's more pressure to make yourself smaller and more like sexually attractive because that's all you have
yeah.
as opposed to part of what you have. So I think that that's yeah. what she speaks to in a way. I definitely don't think that's how people experience it on an individual level, but that's certainly what you would think if you're writing to a group probably. Right. So anyway, she talks about like, eat what you want, like eat the thing you want to eat. And don't try to eat a bunch of things that you don't really want as a stopgap, because then you'll just eat the thing you want on top of the things you didn't want to eat. And that's the thing that you get. So just like, if you really want something, eat it. But if you are getting something to eat because it's going to change the way you feel, think about that. She just like basically says like, sit on that for a bit, think about it for a while. If you still want it after like an hour, go get it basically. Like just, mm-hmm. she just teaches mindfulness with food. And I'm like, mm-hmm. what the fuck? Think about it. No, that's what I don't want to do.
That's like when I'm cooking, I do try to like cook joyful food.
Yeah.
That's, yeah
I cook largely healthy food. Like I get those, I realize that it's processed, but there's these things called flat outs instead of like full buns for like burgers and stuff. Cause like sometimes the bread just makes you so tired, right? And so they're like, they have higher protein. they're higher protein and higher fiber. So like sometimes I'll just get that because it's got a better nutritional profile. And it's like more of the burger and less of the bun. So I like that. But like I'll make big salads and like if I'm making a turkey burger or whatever, I'll make a huge salad and that'll be our dinner.
Right.
So I make by and large pretty healthy food. Once in a while I'll make something like fried chicken or something that's like a really fun food, but usually that's something that I've got from like the freezer section as opposed to something I'm cooking myself. I mostly cook like soup, stews, that kind of thing. I'm a wizard cook in the fall and winter and spring. And then in the summer, I'm kind of like, I don't know, salad and meat. I don't know. I just don't know. So it's much easier for me to cook, but like compromises with food, generally speaking, like trying to eat something good, like just to make sure I'm eating something green in a day. Mm-hmm. Regardless of anything else I put in myself. Because right. sometimes I eat, like, well beyond it's enjoyable for me. Like, it's just...
Mm-hmm.
It's just what... That's the Louis C.K. thing, right? Like, it's not over when I'm full. It's over when I hate myself.
Yeah. That one's real.
That one stings to hear every single time. I'm like, oh, yep. Mm-hmm. I'm just like when your stomach's already distended from everything you've eaten, and you're just like, well, I still have more in this bag. Don't want any leftover tomorrow because then tomorrow I'm going to eat it tomorrow and then that day I'll be shot, so I might as well just ruin only today.
Or when you live with your partner and you buy the bag of chips and you eat more than half.
Then you got to just erase the whole thing.
Get rid of it.
It never happened.
Get rid of the body.
Get rid of it. That's the other thing that Tessa learned in a family of many people is that she hoards things and then eats them like in a sort of progressive way. Like she did that with her Halloween candy. To the point that she wasn't allowed to get candy any other time of year, so she would hoard Halloween candy and just eat it progressively through the year, like, and she would still have some left in, like, the next September, basically.
Wow.
But then her siblings would break in and steal food from her, because they just ate it all in the first week, right, and she's still got some left, so they're like, well, we're gonna take some of hers.
Mm. I did have a moment recently, and I hope Megan doesn't listen to this all the way through.
we're close to the end, so she won't get this part.
Yeah, I figured. I think she found my candy stash, but she didn't confront me about it. She just had some candy.
Maybe she thought this is a healthy place to store snacks and not
could be
shamey.
Could be, yeah, in the filing cabinet. That's.
Are you sure you didn't just sleep eat like you had an Ambien snack or something?
Oh yeah, I don't think so, but I forget what. Tipped me off, but I was like, "This something's wrong here," mm-hmm. and that's my conclusion. I might be off. I might be wrong. It could have just
been
me. Mm-hmm. But
could have been a ghoul.
That happened. So I thought this is a turning point in a relationship. Not a turning point you address. It's just when you
just
know
when you're aware of
it happened.
I would say like you guys could have a candy stash together, and it would be so nice.
But then she'd see how much of it.
Yeah.
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 It's got to be hidden from view.
All right. And I think this is part of the problem is that some shame feels kind of good.
Mm.
You know? Like,
it just makes it all the sweeter when it's verboten.
Yeah. Like, a lot is terrible, but just that little, the little soupçon of just feeling
shitty. Are
you like,
that's my whole life?
Yeah. That's basically my whole life. Yeah.
It's just delicious.
I was thinking about compromises, and I don't really do that when I'm having food. I'm very much like, I give myself the permission to just do whatever, and instead of like... So just enjoy this while you're doing it. Just enjoy it. And I try to only wait to, like, eat really gross food when I, like, actually crave it as opposed to just eating it because it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my mindfulness.
That's good. I think that's a fairly healthy approach.
You know, at least because, like, I would, you know, go to McDonald's all the time and then it would just get gross. And it's like, I'll only eat it if I really am craving it is, like, a big step. You know, and I haven't actually eaten at a McDonald's for a really long time because the one near my house is closed.
Which is
great. Like,
nobody craves Burger King.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's I have the shittiest fast food close by, which is great.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So... But I do find, like, I'll take myself out for food, like, without my partner. Just be like, I'm going to the restaurant, I'm going to get...
That's a Pete Holmes thing, too.
Oh, yeah?
Is it?
Take myself out for dinner.
Oh,
it means something different.
Oh, well, it means, like, masturbating.
Yeah.
Taking myself to dinner. No, but, like, I...
Taking himself on a J-date, I believe he calls it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Gross.
Nice try, the devil.
But, like, so I'll go out and, like, you know, my partner and I love to eat at restaurants together and stuff, but sometimes I'll just be like, I'm going and I'm not inviting him to come with me and I'm going to eat, like, especially meat, like, because, yeah, and he doesn't
take yourself to Gotham.
But, like, he doesn't even mind if I eat chicken in front of him or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not like that would be a thing, but sometimes I'm like, I feel like I am making a bad choice.
I'm going to go have a beef Wellington.
Yeah, like, I'm going to go eat my chicken fingers by myself with my book at the restaurant, like, it's kind of fun, you know?
Taking a book and yourself to dinner or to lunch or to brunch or whatever, is I love it.
I mean,
it's
I do that all the time, but it's a very different thing when I'm like, I'm not going to tell anyone else that I'm here and I'm going to eat this by myself because it's gross. I'm going to have, like, the extra mayo dip and, like, all that. It's that's the thin... Mm-hmm. You know, the thing where line. It's like, does it go from like pleasure, like I'm gonna treat myself, I love my own company very much, yeah. I'm gonna take myself out and just read a book and have a nice food and whatever, to go to like, I feel like I'm kind of sneaking this, you know, and that's the little bit of shame that it does kind of make it tastier. Yeah.
I think we're probably getting to the end of where we want to be, but I would love to just like do some round robining of like, I just love examples of people's like secret eating, like I just love it, that's why I love that joke so much that you have about the putting the peanut buster parfait in your coat pocket and how it just fits perfectly. Like, it's one of my favorite jokes that anyone is telling right now because of just like, fuck.
Oh, thanks.
Whenever I hear it. So I'm just thinking like, what, so you going to Dairy Queen, you've already said, is like a big thing when your partner goes out of town.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's like a bit of a shame food. What else do you have like from your childhood maybe? Because I had my Pizza Pops was a big thing for me. Just the four cheese pizza pop.
That you would sneak.
Yeah. That I would eat a lot of and, like, would, like, maybe bury things in the garbage can so it wasn't immediately obvious how many I'd had.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do that now with, like, microwave dinners sometimes where it's just like, oh, I got, like, a microwave chicken pasta from the grocery store.
Yeah.
And then I'll sometimes, like, put the plastic down away a little bit.
More deep into the recycling bin.
For me, it's more like because I ate before we had dinner, so it's like, hide that. It's like, I'll still eat dinner, but I also ate another dinner. Yeah.
Looking back, I remember as a kid, when I was a teenager, all right, back up. So I said I was in with the cool kids in elementary school.
Right.
That ended come high school, where all my friends went to a different school. We lived in different neighborhoods, so that just had happened. We parted ways, and I was, you know, the oddball cool kid, sort of. Who all of a sudden didn't belong anywhere. Mm-hmm. So grade 8 and 9 were rough. And, I remember coming home and I would cook supper, but it was like, you know, 2-3 hours before supper would happen. I remember having a Mr. Noodle cup, you know, that you'd just pour the hot water into. Yep. And then having a slice of seedy bread with thick butter on top of it. And I would dip.
That sounds so good.
That sounds so fucking good. I would have to get an Ichiban cup because I'm very, like, instant ramen purist.
Right. Okay. But looking back, I realize, like, that's all fat and MSG.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
just
yeah.
Just reinforcing fat and MSG. Mm-hmm. And, but it was my favorite thing. Just dip it in. And yeah, the bread, like, dipping the crust, I guess, would get all soft and gooey.
Yeah.
And the butter would spread out on the top of the Mr. Noodle.
And that would make that, like, more sort of, unk to us almost, like just a bit more.
A little more mouthfeel. Unctuous is kind of a gross thing.
Well, it's kind of a gross thing. Like, it's sort of a gross food, but it's like shame food, right? Like, you made me just remember, like, how, because they would buy cases of ramen, too. Like, we'd get Ichiban original flavor. That's oriental flavor.
Yeah.
That's still what it's called. Mm-hmm. Like, Japan, like, don't do this to yourself, guys.
Yeah.
But that, I remember, like, in elementary school, it was such a thing to bring them as a snack for recess. Like, just eat them raw and, like, crunch them up and then put the packet in and just, like, just eat that. Like, is that paleo if you're eating it with your hands? Almost certainly not.
To eat them dry, like, that was such a thing. Like, a salty snack.
It was, like, such a cool kid thing.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't even care enough to, like, wait a few minutes to, like...
It's like, I don't even want to eat it cooked. Yeah. It's better this way.
Well, because you can run around on the
playground. I'm on a raw food diet.
Yeah. But,
gross.
But describing this Mr. Noodle bowl, like, it kind of sounds like I get why that was good to me at the time, but that one still makes me sad, because it was usually like, today was tough. I'm gonna have all the fat and MSG in the world, like, an hour and a half before eating supper. you know, like unreasonable.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one, a lot of shame still attached to that particular
I would
pairing.
Eat the fuck out of that right this second, though. Yeah. If it was put in front of me.
I think it's too real for me.
Yeah, you'd just be like, no. It tastes like teenage pain.
Yeah. It tastes like my driver's test.
Oh, God, dude, driver, your first photo.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, you had to just take off your glasses and I'm so sorry.
Take a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, the, oh, just thinking, like, having fat kid ingenuity when it comes to snacks, like, especially, like, when I finally started staying up really late on Fridays and Saturday nights, like, my parents would go to bed at 11 or whatever, and I'd stay up till 3, because whatever, you know, I'm 15, and I'm so cool, I'd watch, you know, much music, and I would raid the freezer, and of course, we've got, like, we got so many fridges for a three-person house, like, there was, I swear to God, there was, like, a beer fridge in the garage. There was a backup fridge downstairs in the basement. There was a deep freeze in the basement, and there was the fridge up in the kitchen.
Yep.
And each of those had freezers, and so there was always some kind of ice cream somewhere. Like even if it's just like a bucket of shitty ice cream or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not a shitty vanilla ice cream person. I'm like, not good enough, right? But I got really expert at like creating sundaes late at night where I would just like take a glass, like, Persex measuring cup and melt a bunch of peanut butter in it and then throw in some chocolate chips and, like, make my own sauce and, like, drizzle it over the ice cream and then find my dad's, like, stale pretzels and crumble them up and put them on top. And so I was just, like, a snack MacGyver. This is before I even was a stoner. So what I think, like, if I'd found weed earlier in life, I would be good 50 pounds heavier than I already am.
This is a chef's origin story,
though. Like. Yeah, but that was a real tasty treat, I must say. That was one of the better things that I made, because I've definitely eaten horrible things. Like, I would just take, this is another Jasta thing that she taught me to do, is just take a piece of bread and put molasses on it. It's just, like, quick delivery.
That's, my dad is big into that. He's from Newfoundland. So Newfoundland.
Oh, no, she's from fucking Nova Scotia. So yeah, it must be an East Coast thing to like just pour molasses on bread. It's like almost a donut.
Yep.
Not quite though.
Not quite.
No.
I'm not a sweets person, and no. I knew that I used to be when I was younger, I think, but I can't even remember.
Mm.
Like there was just a time when my mom got diabetes when she was 50.
Mm-hmm.
So that was I was like 15 or something like that. I don't however time works. There was something, I think it was maybe I was, yeah, I would have been 20 and she was 50. That's unimportant. But
you gotta get it right.
But she, yeah, it was just like, oh, suddenly I have diabetes. And so in solidarity, we just both cut out all sugar.
Right.
Until she could kind of stabilize. And I like realized that I didn't need sugar in my coffee if I just drank better quality coffee.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't need sugar in this because I just had better quality, whatever. Like the sugar was always blanketing something else.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like I don't need a lot of sugar, but then I realize that I also drink a lot of wine. Mm-hmm. And so if I don't drink wine, then I want something sweet. So it's like, I'm obviously just supplementing like one with the other.
Yeah.
So I still have a sweet tooth. It's just in a different form.
We
more or less.
We just started doing bookshelf box wine. Where there's a box of wine on the bookshelf with the books, and it's just there if you want it. It's kind of nice.
That's good.
Yeah.
You can only do that with red, though, because you don't want any fucking warm white wine.
That's true, but I'm fine with that.
I wish I could drink red wine still.
I'm trying to think of, like, again, like, the sneaky things that I would, like, sneak snacks as a kid.
Oh.
But we were pretty open about food stuff in my house. It was just me and my mom mostly, so we would just, like, make snacks for each other. But then she would go to bed at 8, and I think the thing that I snuck was, like, watching, like, Skinamax and shit. And I would just, like, sneak masturbate
Red
instead
shoot.
Of
sneak masturbate.
Yeah, like, because her bedroom was right by the TV.
This is not an either-or thing, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I just wouldn't, I wouldn't sneak snacks, but I would sneak that. So I still got my
you'd
quick
sneak,
endorphin.
You'd sneak sex, not snacks.
Are you guys old enough to have, like, actually watched the Scramble channels?
Yep.
Because I sure did that.
You're 84. 84. But yeah. Just on the tail.
I never got any Scramble channels in my house, but we would go over to my friend's house to watch Scramble channels on their satellite.
Yeah. Like, but like with the image going. The sound came in clear.
I saw a boob.
I think I like the sound more than anything.
Yeah. Yep. That was the most dangerous thing, because a muted TV is not going to alert a parental presence.
I know. But so I think that was my late night, instead of sneaking snacks and making sundaes, I would just, like, sneak a blanket.
Explore yourself. sneak food, because I didn't have to really sneak anything, because my parents would be out for a long period of time, so it's like, I didn't really get into trouble. I did stuff I wasn't supposed to do, but nothing that if they found out they would be shocked by or really that upset by. They'd be like, right. Don't violate our privacy. It'd be like, well, too bad. I'm going to look through your stuff when you're not here. That's how I babysit. That's how I babysit myself. But I definitely remember as a kid taking, because we kept the butter and the sugar in the same cupboard, so I'd take like a finger, like make like a butter hat on my finger.
Wow.
And then dip it in the sugar bowl. I'm like, butter sugar.
That's so naked.
Like, that's perfect. Yeah. That's so brazen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But real. It's hussy. What we're all doing. Mm-hmm. It was just fat
it's
and
just
sugar.
The purest, but it's the purest expression of that. And yeah, my coworker Carolyn, she tells me that she used to love butter. So before she became lactose intolerant, she would just leave teeth marks in the butter as a child. She'd like take a stick of butter and just bite it.
That's like shame eating fentanyl.
Basically, like, it is just like so strong. I mean, no, it is like it is just heroin. Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Like it is just eating a poppy, basically. Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
Oh my god!
Anything else that I would sneak? There were so many things, because like once you have some spending money of your own, like the exciting thing. The thing was though, we live far enough away from a 7-Eleven that if I went with my friends, like it's a full mile to the 7-Eleven and back. So you'd walk 2 miles to get a Slurpee, and I mean, like that sort of balances itself out, right? Like because I didn't have enough money to buy a lot of stuff, I'd get like a thing of penny candy, get a Slurpee. Mm-hmm. You're walking around all day, like.
Yeah, that was a part of my youth. That wasn't, like, shameful either.
No, that was the thing you did with your friends. Yeah. Because it's exciting to have it. Why is the Slurpee, like, the most exciting thing to a child? I guess because you can't make it at home.
Mm-hmm. I lived in the Okanagan, which was hot. Yeah. So, like, Slurpees were at least, like, they helped you cool.
Yeah.
But that was even, like, before I was, before I drank. Yeah. But I was still, like, 18,
19.
Yeah. Every Friday, somebody would drive. And we'd go to the video store and rent, like, 5 or 7
get
movies.
Get the 7 movies for 7 days for $7
exactly,
or whatever it was.
Whatever it was. And then we'd go to 7-Eleven and we all spend, like, $2 on candy and or a slush.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd watch 3 to 4 of those movies in a sitting. So
yeah.
That was
a beautiful
Friday
time.
Night.
That was a good time.
And so,
it was, like the most fun I ever really had, honestly. If I look back at, like, how purely fun it was.
Yeah.
It's like, it was very uncomplicated because it was like, all I want to do is spend time with people and like have these pleasurable experiences. Yeah. And it didn't get complicated with like, well, I should be doing my homework because I didn't give a fuck about my homework.
That's actually the saddest thing about visiting home now for me is that the video stores aren't there.
Yeah.
Because those were so like concretely part of my youth.
Ours was like a total meeting place. It was called Phase One Video and a bunch of really cool people I know.
Yeah.
Even still, like I'm still... at least Facebook friends with 3 people who worked there.
Yeah.
Easily. Yeah. And one of them is, like, the programming director for CFOX now, which is so fucking funny. Huh. Hey,
that's
Adam
awesome.
Baldwin, how are you? but they worked there, and we just thought they were, like, the coolest people in their flannel jackets and shit.
Sure.
Like, just, like, the best grunge job you could have was working in a video store
yes.
in the late 90s. Like,
so good.
It was the coolest. They were so cool. So cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just, I was just like, yes, I would like to rent Labyrinth again, please. I'm having a sexual awakening. How are you?
Jennifer Connelly is my forever crush.
Yes. She is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
One of mine as well.
She's goodness. Terrible in that movie. Yeah. She's a very bad actress in that film.
She's just a little wee
little thing.
Kid.
With her beautiful caterpillar eyebrows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But oh, so, man. Like, then snacks get tied up in, like, the pleasure of, like, sitting and watching a movie with your friends.
Yeah.
You're also having snacks. You make popcorn. Like, so much of food is social, cultural, like, sharing, like,
mm-hmm.
I love that shit. And so that's why I never want to, when I start getting into, like, oh, I should change my diet, and I should do this, or I should restrict that, or whatever, it always gets into, like, why are you taking the joy out of my life? Like, food is joy and pleasure and goodness. So I just
want to be medium fat forever.
Yeah, basically. And just happy.
Just medium fat and happy.
And not restricting my life too much and not denying myself like good enjoyment and
geez, that sounds fucking reasonable.
Yeah,
Chris.
I know. Just like but like trying to fill my life with like all this abundance of like good shit and like maybe trying to cut some of the junky shit out.
Yeah.
If possible. But like why stress?
Why
not just be fat and happy?
Because the thing is you go on a diet, like 97% of people, if you lose a bunch of weight, it's all coming back plus more.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened to me every single time I've lost any weight. Like, when I was 15, I did Weight Watchers with my mom, and the only reason I lost, like, 25 pounds is because she cooked all of my meals and, like, made sure that all the snacks were purchased. So I just had to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I, like...
I do great on diets when someone else is telling me what to do. That's
exactly.
why juice cleanses work.
Sure. I was skinny for 2 years, but it's because I did a real manual labor job.
Right.
For like 10 hours a day, four days a week.
What was it?
I built trusses in a factory. So, like, the supports for roofs.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that was a hard job, and I worked a lot of overtime, and I was 160 pounds for a while, which...
You're a tall guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm like, you know, like a hair under 6 feet.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm thinking, like, that's pretty light for 6 feet tall.
Yeah, and for
my
frame. I certainly
weigh quite a bit more than that.
Yeah. No, I was, there are photos, and it's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. I would like to see them just because I'm curious, but that sounds scary. Like, you are a human man bear, and
it was,
it's great.
It was too skinny. But it was interesting because it did, like, it did come at a time in my life when I was, like, negotiating actually dating and doing stuff like that. So mm-hmm. it was very helpful. But I am at that point where I'm realizing, like, no, I'm a husky dude. I will always be a husky dude from mm-hmm. this point on.
Mm-hmm.
I can moderate it. I can change some things. I'd yeah. like to have a little less tummy, but that's kind of it, mm-hmm. honestly. Like,
I can relate to that.
It's the that sort of, what's it called? Like, the health at any size kind of thing. That was, like, the last part of my thesis where it's, like, it's not that you are healthy at any size, but it's, like, here's sort of a way to conceptualize food, and a lot of it has to do with mindful eating.
Yeah.
A lot of it has to do with just moving your body because mm-hmm. it feels joyful.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like, these are the things. It's, like, do everything with, like, a happiness, and, like, health is not just your physical form, but also your mental health. Yep. Like,
mm-hmm.
so how can I be happy? How can I feel like my body feels capable of doing stuff and carrying me through, like, all the adventures that I want to do in my life while still leaving time for naps and snuggles?
Yeah.
You know? And just all the good stuff. So those are the things that I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
Just be a happy kid. So, yeah, running around and playing in the ocean for a week was definitely my happy place.
I'm glad you got to do that. Yeah. I'd really like to be more in that mindset, but mm-hmm. I definitely, like, just... catch myself in the mirror at the wrong time and go, like, oh, you're a bad person.
Yeah.
that is not the body of a good and, you know, controlled human being.
Yeah.
Which is so terrible. But, like, a bunch of people in my family just lost a bunch of weight recently, and I'm just kind of like, what do they think of me?
Because
your family is probably the only people who are actually going to think of you that way.
Yeah. I avoid looking in the mirror. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's when I know things are bad.
Yeah.
Same with the dissertation, when I'm avoiding everything about
right.
it. It's like,
this is all the things. We avoid the stuff that we're scared to face. And it's like, I know I have to do something about this, so I'm just not going to think about it.
There's some, and I feel like a huge dork for bringing this up, because I know neither of you watch it, but a very recent episode of Steven Universe gave a perfect, perfect checklist for young people to discover mindfulness. There's a song, and it's, like, all about, like, what happens when your thoughts get out of control and you spiral, and how to avoid it. It's just, like, all about, like, taking a moment to take a breath and, like, think about your thoughts. Like, it's beautiful. And it's really, like, if you want to look, if anybody wants to look it up, it's on YouTube. You could just look up Steven Universe, and I think it's called, yeah, I can link it. I think it's called Here Comes a Thought. And it's just all about, here comes the thought, just let it pass you right by. It's okay, like, you've got yourself, basically.
Ugh,
it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. And I think, like, that could be applied to anything we're talking about here. Your dissertation, comedy, food, like, all of this stuff is all so tied up in self-worth that when the thing that we're doing isn't going well, we think we're bad.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
I like it. That feels like a good
Should we call it a day?
Sure.
This is a great time, guys. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming.